and then consider to adopt it. I'm a bit reluctant to consider it for adoption today, when only half or almost less half the member of the committee sat through the presentation of the stress test. Although I know that members had actually studied it, I would be guided by you, Dr. Van Dijk. I wanted to say you, comrades, but you are my comrade. Over to you.
Chairperson, thank you. Chairperson, yeah, just two things. It must be noted that the Democratic Alliance is 100% attending today this meeting. And secondly, Chairperson, on your proposal, may I request for consideration that we gathered on Thursday, not tomorrow, because tomorrow we've got an early plenary, questions to President Zuma, and then plenary in the afternoon, while on Thursday our caucuses will stop before lunch, and then, you know, the plenary is only after lunch. Thank you.
To your point, Mrs. Bowman.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, I think your proposal is a good one, and we support that. Just to say also that from our point of view, I've just been checking the diary here. The Thursday would also be, I think, a better day.
Thank you. Again, Mr. Mokwena, Honourable. Just press your mic on that. Could somebody help, please?
Yeah. Oh, thank you very much. Thanks very much. Yeah, Chairperson, I concur with my colleagues that Thursday is a better day. Yeah, lunch hour. Thank you.
Thank you very much. To the members who have just come in, I want to thank the members who held it out the last, but also those who attended, although I also know that those who could not attend had legitimate, genuine reasons, and we had accepted your apologies on Friday for not being able to attend. I wanted to thank particularly the chairperson for Friday, Dr. Korenhoff, who held it out until after 4 o'clock on a Friday. And I was saying to the meeting, Dr. Korenhoff, I was checking hourly on you guys. You were not away from my sickbed. In fact, there was a time when I was checking you out every 30 minutes. Then Disang sent me capital letters. We're still in a meeting. So after which I then monitored you every 1 hour. The last time I checked was 4:15. And I really, really felt sorry for you. But I also felt very encouraged by your dedication. I know that the numbers had dwindled for very legitimate reasons, because Fridays are very difficult days. We all know that airports in South Africa on Fridays and on Mondays are very difficult places to be at. And if you miss one flight, you are likely to go home tomorrow or to spend more than 6 hours or so at the airport. But I think there is also a pre 2010 World Cup mood. The airports are just full every day, even if it is not a Friday. The flights are difficult. I was summoned myself to the powers that be, because I'm summoned every 3 months for political reasons. I missed one crucial meeting. And you don't do that, but because the flights are just difficult. So the members who had to leave on Friday, they had to leave because of that reason. And the members who could not attend also had a legitimate reason not to attend. But my greatest thanksgiving goes to the chairperson, who was left in a lurch by myself. Thank you very much, Dr. Korenhoff. I have said I'm uncomfortable for us to consider and adopt the stress plan today, for the mere fact that half of the committee did not sit through the proceedings of the presentation of the stress plan on Friday. I've made a request that the committee has adopted, that I must make an urgent application for us to meet over lunchtime on Thursday, just after caucuses, to consider and adopt the strat plan. We have done a revised, concise compressed presentation of the stress plan that will be circulated in this meeting that will further assist you to prepare for Thursday's meeting. And this proposal has already been accepted. By so saying, I'm suggesting that we are deleting what is point 4 on the agenda for today's meeting. So we actually basically will be having, I would presume I have done opening and welcome. We will only do apologies. Then we will receive the briefing by PBMR after I've done one remark about them. And then we will have another second leg of the meeting, very brief one, after we've released them, our own issue of the Transnet issue. From the chair, then I would propose that the agenda, if accepted, should be we should have a proposal and then a seconder for the adoption of the agenda. Gloria proposes so that I have different parties, not that I'm being party political, and then Mr. Van Dalen is adopting the agenda. I hope you have the names of the honourable members who have proposed and adopted. Thank you. I have already welcomed our colleagues from PBMR. After apologies, I'll give you time to introduce yourselves. We will also, I presume you know the honourable members, but we will take a quick round of introducing ourselves first before you introduce yourselves. Disang, what apologies do we have?
Okay. We received an apology from Ms. Hajij, and Mr. Mnana will be coming late. Those are the only official apologies I received. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Mr. Manyana is still a member of our committee. Okay. If he has not said anything, probably he's still coming. We don't know. We'll see. He might join us. Okay. Thank you very much. Mr. Jace is attending. Okay. All right. Doctor's appointment. Okay. So I will propose from the chair that we accept those apologies and proceed. I'm the chairperson of the committee, Faye Kimento, and I'll ask my members from that side to introduce themselves quickly.
Good morning. My name is Chris Hololo, a member of this portfolio committee. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Gloria Borman, member of the committee.
Good morning. My name is Aubrey Mokwena, a member of the committee.
My name is Peter van Dalen, also a member of this committee.
Marnie van Dijk, member of the committee.
Gerard Koornhof, member of the Portfolio Committee on Public Enterprises.
Thank you. We'll ask our guests to introduce themselves. First, we'll start with DPE. Want to welcome DPE. Welcome, Chris.
Thanks, Chair. Chris Foley from DPE.
We're not going to have spies sitting in our meetings who don't introduce themselves. DPE?
From Mandiwana, DPE.
Morning. It's Colin Cray. Welcome, DPE.
Over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Gerrit Geus. I'm the non-executive director of PBMR and also the chairman of the Audit, Risk and Finance Committee. I wish to apologize for our chairperson, Dr. Alistair Reiters, who is unfortunately not here today. He's just returned from the US over the weekend, and unfortunately it's not possible for him, but he did send his apologies, chairperson. In front of me, we have our acting CEO, Dr. Alex Chela. Next to him, our Chief Financial Officer, Ms. Lynette Milne, and next to me, Mr. Pat Tema, who is our manager responsible for stakeholder relationships.
So you're the leader of the delegation. Thank you very much. Thanks. I'm going to put the PBMR on this. Is it this under the spotlight? I'm going to raise this because I want your response to go on record. And I'm raising this also because it's a critical question that Parliament must raise, if Parliament doesn't raise, Parliament will be failing in its duties, constitutional duties. We meet here on the, what is the day today? 23rd of March. I would like PBMR to calculate for us. Firstly, they must tell us exactly on which date this year did you table your annual report before Parliament, the exact date of your tabling, and the reasons for that. We do know why, but I want this to go on the record of the committee. And thirdly, to tell us how delayed the tabling of your annual report was. So those two things. The date on which you tabled, the reasons why you tabled on that date, how far delayed was your tabling, for what reason, even before you do your presentation. So I would like to pose those four questions to you, but even before you pose this question, I would like to raise another issue. I'm sure you, PBMR is aware. I'm raising this for the interest of DPE and for the interest of all other entities and everybody that we should hold accountable as Parliament. Parliament has, there is a new Act of Parliament. It's in bill form. It's becoming an act now. That gives Parliament the right to amend the money bill, which was not there before, historically. Now, that comes with enormous responsibility on the part of Parliament. You don't just amend the budget. You take a whole lot of things into consideration, and you do serious work. You take a fine comb. The issue of delayed annual reports is going to be a thing of the past. And it's no longer going to be possible for a political head of the department to just say that I'm asking for an extension for the delay of the submission of an annual report. Because if you do that, or if political head does that, that will hold into ransom and delay the entire approval of the whole budget of that department, and that not only of that entity. And then Parliament would not be in a position to endorse or to allocate budget to the department or to the entities falling under that department if there is an outstanding annual report. So we have to exercise caution in terms of falling within the desired timelines of tabling annual reports. So I'm just cautioning this to say that all of us together, from Parliament to departments to political heads, which is members of executive, to entities, to agencies, the new act calls upon ourselves to do things better and to improve, especially also on the timelines, if Parliament is to fulfill its mandated role in the Constitution made possible by the Act. Having said this, I would ask PBMR to answer those questions and then to check with members whether they have preliminary things to say in relation to this. Then the format of the meeting after that will be that PBMR presents, and then we listen to the presentation, and then we ask further questions after the presentations. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair, and the members of the Portfolio Committee. Firstly, we welcome the opportunity that the committee would allow us to make a presentation, the discussion of the annual report. We also want to just cover the questions that the Chair has raised up front with PVMR. Just to explain, Chair, before I get into the answering, we will do this discussion together with my colleague, the CFO. The reasons may be obvious, Chair. I found that it's one thing to be in a bus and it's another thing to sit in the driver's seat. So in my case, I'm just starting this process. So my colleague who has been working with the PMR for some time, she will come in very strongly on some of the issues. So we will do that, Chair. I hope the Chair will allow us to do it that way. Chair, just in terms of the specific questions, we did submit the annual report on the 17th of December 2009, and then it was actually tabled on the 4th of January 2010. So in terms of the specific questions that the Chair has asked, what I would do, Chair, because your question also wanted us to talk about the reasons.
Clarify this. When you say you submit, you mean you submitted to the minister on the 17th or to Parliament?
Chair, thank you. We submitted 800 copies to Parliament, and we sent those copies off on the 17th of December, and I understand that it was tabled on the 4th of January.
Thank you, Lynette. So those are the specific dates, Chair. And I would just say again on the specific reasons of the late submission, because my colleague Lynette was working closely in preparation and the discussions with the department, that she can just come in and explain that.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. PBMR is a Schedule 2 public entity. So in terms of the Public Finance Management Act, we are prescribed to submit our annual report by the end of August. So one of the answers to the questions is really we were 4 months late. We requested extension of the submission of the annual report because PBMR is a global private and public partnership. We are also in the process of accepting an award by the U.S. Department of Energy for a contract. Where we were last year in August, our auditors, our independent auditors conducted by KPMG, they were not in a position to give us a clean and unqualified audit report. It was important for the company to have a clean and an unqualified independent audit report. What the board did in December, we accepted and we adopted a financial policy which enabled us to release our clean audit report without a qualification so that we can submit our annual report. The financial policy that we adopted was to say that the directors of PBMR undertake to curtail all expenses and commitments to meet the available cash resources. In terms of the financial statement, which really tests the going concern, which is what KPMG would have done, they need to make sure that you have sufficient funding 12 months from the date of signature that you put on your audit report. So if the auditors signed the audit report in December, we needed to make sure that from December we had sufficient funding to December 2010. So for that technical reason, the board demonstrated that with the actions that we have in play at the moment, we're going to go through those this morning. We have sufficient funding until December 2010. On that basis, we received an unqualified audit report. We could sign the audit statements, release them, and submit the annual report for you for a review this morning.
Just to summarize two things that you said. You said, because we agree that you are you should have tabled in August, like all entities like you, and therefore you tabled 4 months late. And then you're saying the reason is that you are a global private-public partnership. I don't want to engage into a, what is this thing? What do you call this dialogue? Yeah, with CVMR. I don't know any section of the PB of the Public Finance Management Act that says that an entity that sees itself as being a global public partnership entity has the right to delay its tabling of the annual report. I can argue that DINEL is in the same category as you, and yet DINEL tables there. And in fact, I don't think this was the first time. I don't think this was the first year. If you go into the legacy report of Parliament, I might be wrong on this one. You'll correct me. But I would, even before you respond, let me just take if there is anything from the members, so that when you respond to remarks from a group of people and not only from the chair. Mrs. Gloria?
Can I just be clear in what you're saying because of the delay from August to December? When you talk about having to have the year's funding so that you've got the unqualified report, was the difference in the trip to get funding overseas which made the difference to the... I don't understand why from August to August that didn't apply, but from December to December that would apply. Does that make sense? I just want to have clarity about that. Thank you.
Mr. Van Dalen and Mr. Van Dijk.
Yes, Madam Chair. I just want to know if it is normal practice that when somebody does an audit report, and the audit report must be in at a certain date for everybody, that when they think they're going to get an unqualified audit report, they can keep it back. And I think the date is there, it's clear, it must be there. And if it's unqualified audit report, it must get an unqualified one or a qualified one with certain besware wat daarop is, then that must be done. I mean, otherwise everybody's going to keep their audits away from us just because they think they're going to get an unqualified one. And that we can't allow as Parliament.
Actually cheating the system and the Act.
Chairperson, yes. Originally it was said in the public domain that the reason why the Minister, the political head, asked for extension for the annual report to be presented to Parliament was that PVMR at that stage do not want an qualified audit report, and that they look for international funding to get an unqualified audit report. Now, since August, I just want to know, did they get then the international funding, the investment, private investment in the, and was that the main reason for the delay, and what if they did receive then foreign investment, from whom, and was it in that time frame that you then presented your annual report? Thank you, Chair.
I have a follow-up thing, but I'll take the two hands first, because there were two different things that were submitted as a reason. Mr. Mokoena, Mr. Ambrosini?
Yeah, Chairperson, the colleagues have already partly covered me. I'm a bit puzzled because PBML is supposed to be an SOE, and the government and the nation indeed have got ownership claim to you. Now, in terms of the financial protocol, I don't understand how you managed to go and raise funds overseas. We know how ESCOM had to, what the president ESCOM had to follow. Now, can you just willy-nilly just go overseas and raise funds quickly in 4 months' time? And what obligations will those be placed on the government in order just to appease the requirements of the audit? I don't think this portfolio committee, in terms of its oversight role, can just be happy that, oh, no, you, the extension of time was granted and you've raised the money and your glossy report looks very, very good. And yet, that is not matched by the deliverables. Because there are a lot of things that one could definitely say about PBMR. I mean, some of us have been very articulate about the whole existence of PBMR and the fact that you know, the deliverables are a bit imperceptible and dubious. I'm not going to preempt the report, but you must understand the context in which the members are raising this is not to be obstructionist, but to actually say it must shouldn't be a gimmicky way of saying it's a facade. When the clean report was, you see, it's almost like a person saying, I've not done surgery at the moment now, and I want to avoid surgery and only have that another time, when in fact it's going to become a gimmicky surgical exercise, which will defeat the purpose of healing.
Madam Chair, my humblest apologies for the late arrival. I reviewed quickly the presentation, and the front page is a ball, but I feel...
Sorry, for your assistance. We asked them preliminary questions. They're still going to present after this preliminary
question. Okay, then my question is on the front page.
Okay.
It's a ball, but I don't have a clear understanding of the ballpark. And what are we looking at? Are we looking at the situation of the PBMR transforming itself into a technology supplying company rather than a company which will build us a nuclear reactor? And if the latter is the case, when?
That's a relevant point, but it will come out of the presentation. PBMR is going to make two presentations in one. One of them will be the annual report. The second one will be where they are at the moment, what they are, and what they are going to in the future. So that question is relevant, but you will hold it until the presentation. You see, Dr. Fandek says that in the public domain, it was said that you are going to raise funds, etc., etc. That's not the official, or that's not what is contained in the official communique that I put before this committee that came from the minister. The official communique that I have, which is a letter that was written to the speaker, CC'd to me, said that you guys are still dealing with your funding model. Now, I wrote back to say that what does a funding model, grappling with a funding model for the future, have to do with accounting for the monies that you were given in the outgoing financial year? And that is what the members are struggling to grapple with, that why should funding money and funding a model for funding money be a prerequisite for accounting on the money that the South African state had given to you to use in a particular financial year, of which you should have reported in August about what you have done in all that money and the plans that you had put before this parliament to endorse and the things you were going to do in order to get that money that you were given. So you will try as much as you can to clarify, but we wanted you to really understand our fix and our dilemma. And because we have never had a space to engage you, it's only now in this meeting we have yearned to ask you these questions since August last year. That's why we need to start in the preliminary way to clear the air so that you answer these questions even before you go into your presentation. Over to you, TVMR.
Chair, thank you. And the members, I would again just request Lynette CFO to address the specifics. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. Just in terms of the PFMA, you are correct. There's nothing in the PFMA which authorizes PBMR or allows PBMR not to submit its annual report by August, because we operate under an existing cooperation agreement with IDC, Westinghouse, and Eskom. So that statement is correct. Secondly, this is the first time that we've submitted our annual report late. This is the third annual report that we have submitted to Parliament, and it's the first time that we are late. the only reason that we submitted that was because of the funding constraints. It is true that in terms of the PFMA, we do not have authority to be able to raise fundings in the foreign market. This is not about raising the money in the foreign market. This was primarily the participation in a contract award by the U.S. Department of Energy. The total sum of that contract is $40 billion, and PBMR has an opportunity to be able to participate in a consortium with Westinghouse and Shaw for at least 50% of that amount of money, but that is to be shared between the consortium members. In our own consortium, PBMR has sufficient scope, and that means that we have the skills, the competence, and the capability in PBMR to take up 50% of the amount awarded to this consortium. If you look at the budget for the current year, I have included that in part two of the slides. The revenue that we will get from this contract is an estimated $10 million, and that is included in the budget for the coming year. The going concern, which is a technicality between ourselves and KPMG, is just to make sure that PBMR has sufficient funding. And to answer the question, what changed from August to December? The big change was that PBMR, the board of PBMR, decided to streamline and rationalize the business of PBMR. We are currently contemplating what you call, in terms of the Labor Relations Act, large-scale retrenchments, and the extent of those retrenchments could be up to 75% of the number of employees at PBMR.
You know what? So that we do not, we will come back to this issue if need be, but I want to propose from the chair to the members that we have expressed our discomfort. And we have expressed, you can see that none of us understands or accepts the reasons you have put before this committee as a delay, for as legitimate reasons for the delay. So we can do nothing about that except to say to PBMR, what happened is unacceptable, was unacceptable, and should be avoided in the future. So there is nothing we will do now to correct it, but to put it on record that as this committee we do not accept it as a right practice, and we think that actually you were not, it was not right for you to do what you have done. Having said this, I would propose that we proceed now with the other leg of the committee of the committee meeting, which is the presentation that you are going to make. I would like to ask Ms. Gloria Bowman or Mr. Khololo to come and chair for me for 10 minutes. There is a matter that I'm dealing with, which is questions to the President tomorrow, together with the Chief Whip's office. And I said to them, when they need me, they must signal to me that I must come. It will take only 10 minutes. They have just said I must come over. So I'll ask like any one of the two members sitting in front here to come and chair for me until I come back. Thanks.
Just to make sure about the previous point, I think what the committee wanted was the reasons for the delay and whether that is in sync with the reasons given by the minister. When you first start to explain the reason for delay, I don't think the committee can accept the reason was to avoid a clean and unqualified audit report. That is not a sufficient reason to give to Parliament to delay a report. In your own director's report on 75 of this current annual report before us, on paragraph 4, you talk about the going concern. And then you talk about the current funding constraints, the assessment of the going concern and your cash resources to meet your expenditures and commitments. And in your follow-up, you explain that. And that is sufficient reason. But you cannot explain to Parliament that because the reason for the delay is to delay to get a qualified audit opinion. That is unacceptable, and we cannot accept that. But once you say this is a going concern, you've got cash restraints in your own report, and then you explain, that is acceptable. And I think that is the reason why the chair say it is not acceptable, the explanation. We accept that late tabling, but we expect honest and straightforward reasons why it was delayed, and you did it in your follow-up.
Thank you, Dr. Kurnoff. Honourable Ambrosini.
Thank you for my colleague for the technological assistance. Thank you, Madam Chairman. Just want to plead with my colleagues through you, Madam Chairman. The details don't matter. Something went wrong, and they are in transformation. I mean, this to me. We use the word strategic for everything nowadays, even to change a light bulb. But this is a strategic time in a strategic state-owned enterprise. So I think we should focus on really understanding what's going on, what are the options, what are the ups and downs, pros and cons of each option. And if I can perhaps suggest through you, Mr. Chairman, that we declare our being satisfied and being unsatisfied and we move on.
Thank you very much. Yes, I think we have ruled on that, and we now hand over to you for your presentation. Who's going to start? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and the committee. As I explained, I will lead the presentation, and I will every now and then ask my colleague, the CFO, to come in and clarify things. I should just put a context, Chair, as the chairperson of the audit committee explained that I'm acting, so this has since been about 2 weeks. So I hope the committee can understand why I would always request the CFO to explain some of the details. I am in the organization, I've been in the organization, but it's always different to be sitting in the bus and then sitting in the driver's seat. And it's a different play. Chair, before I go into the details, let's just accept what the portfolio committee has said about the delay, and we will do our best that it doesn't happen the way it has happened. And when we clarify the questions, we will understand what the committee is looking for. So we accept that and we note it for changes in the future. Thank you, Chair. I will then go through the slides as presented. As the Chair has said, we will actually be looking at briefing the committee about what has happened up to this point, the annual report. Then we'll also be looking at what's currently happening in the organization, since we're aware that the committee members would be aware it's been reported in the media, it's been reported through DPE. Then we'll also talk about some possible way forward, so that the committee could engage in some of those discussions. Thank you. In terms of presenting the annual report, the aspects that we'll cover, Chair, are the ones listed on this table of contents. Basically, we'll look at the introduction and cover some of the value statements, the mission, vision, and all that. But importantly, Chair, what we want to do is to talk about the change, what kind of changes have had to happen, and why some of those changes have had to happen. And then we'll just highlight a few things on the objectives. Chair, as a introductory part, the slide that's on the screen, I just want to highlight that during this last financial year, 2008-2009, PBMR operated in a context of economical changes, as the whole of our South Africa and the world was at. These changes prompted some rethink in the organization in terms of the product, in terms of the business model, in terms of licensing, in terms of the financials. And of importance, just the slide on the left, the diagram which says PBMR focus, This is in terms of our product. PVMR has always had these two product lines where we're looking at what we used to call the direct cycle. We also have the product line of the indirect cycle, but during this period of operation, there was a change of focus in terms of the product, looking more towards the indirect cycle. Chair, we will come to some discussions why that was necessary, but this is just a highlight I want to do on this first slide. Chair, in terms of our war cry as an organization, your vision, mission, values, and brand, what I just would like to highlight is that our mission still stands as PMR to provide an environmentally friendly, accessible, and market-driven nuclear energy system. And just an important value, Chair, that I would like to highlight to the committee is that being a nuclear company, safety and quality without compromise on standards is really our number one value. And also partnering to create sustainable success. I just pick a few things, Chair, for the committee in terms of the slides. Thanks. So if I may come to a critical discussion point, which is the time for change, why we have to consider change, and change from what to what, and what does it do in thinking of the future of the PMR. During this financial year 2008-2009, PMR had to look back at what we've been able to do up to that point and look at the future and say, how do we position the organization so that it could still be able to provide value for South Africa and also tap into the world market for the future. And the point, Chair, that's significant, which we had to consider there, was to become what we call a nuclear design authority, South Africa's nuclear design authority. If you look at the diagram, that is the point on, I think it's green, you will pardon me with the colors, Chair. Thank you. That's what the change was. Basically, the change is saying we become an engineering and licensing organization. Then you leave the aspects of building the reactor, the aspect of operating the reactor to a form of a consortium versus the model that we were, where everything was housed in one organization. But the thinking of the change was, what should we become to play well in the industry, but not only just for the high-temperature reactor, but also thinking about the light-water reactor. So becoming that design authority and then allowing a consortium, a special purpose vehicle consortium, to then look at the rest of the value chain of the organization. That was an important thinking, which basically said, what's the role clarity for PBMR in the entire space of a nuclear industry? Chair, some highlights, as I mentioned earlier, Chair, I will just pull out some things and then allow the committee to raise questions, then we can be more specific. In terms of some highlights, what I just wanted to mention, there, Chair, is that the page on the highlights is simply saying to the committee, even though we were in such an economically challenging time, PBMR was still able to do work. We're still able to work against our objectives. We're still able to achieve things during that financial year. Some of them I just covered there, Chair. We've talked about the unqualified audit report. There's been discussions about it. One of the things I've highlighted there was nuclear licensing. During this financial year, we're able to engage the regulator very rigorously and in terms of clarifying our role as a nuclear design authority, which was very different from what we've been doing in the past, where our engagement was entirely via ESCOM as the license applicant. So that was a very significant change and a significant thinking of the PVMR. One other highlight I've just put, they was able to submit the environmental impact report for the Kuberg site. So that was able to be done and it was sent to government. Maybe another highlight on the next page which was already talked about earlier, we were able, the board was able to take a decision that we can actually go in to the NGNP bidding. The NGNP is the Next Generation Nuclear Program of the Department of Energy in the USA. So PBMR was able to submit for that bidding. Another highlight here I could just raise there is that we were able to actually get a license from the regulator for our fuel development laboratory. This was very important here because then we were able to actually manufacture first the kernels, which with 9.6 enriched uranium, which means this is now real fuel, which has uranium in it. So we're able to manufacture that, and we sent it overseas to be tested. And we're also able to manufacture the actual sphere, and that we've also sent it for testing. So there was some real deliverables in terms of PBMR work on the fuel side that we're able to achieve during this period. I think those are the highlights here I could just raise. I think at this point I could just say thank you to the committee, that the committee visited our facility at the fuel development labs where we actually manufactured this fuel. Chair, in terms of the performance against objectives, what we've simply done is just to package each of the objectives in a table to say what was the objective, how was it measured, what is the status of that objective. I think, Chair, I would actually just page through those without going into each one of them because they basically cover what we've talked about. Another area, Chair, during this financial year that we're reporting on that was very significant for us was the actual technology development. And in that respect, Chair, I just want to highlight a few things. First of all, during this period, PBMR was able not only to focus on designing the reactor or designing the fuel or doing fuel tests, but PBMR was able to contribute in terms of skills development broadly in the nuclear industry by working with six universities in South Africa and also working with NEXA on activities that relate to how do you use PBMR understanding, PBMR knowledge to actually train students in nuclear using a PBMR. What often happens in university, students require a project, a specific project. So PBMR was available for various students to use the PBMR as their project, both for honors level, for master's level, for PhD level. So this, during this financial year, was a very significant contribution, Chair. And as well as just R&D on specific things that are always issues in nuclear, for example, the waste. During this period, PBMR was able to do a lot of research and development in terms of waste minimization, in terms of improving the materials and the fuel measurement techniques. This becomes important because this is value engineering to what the technology was when it's taken back from Germany. That the next slide, Chair, just shows some of the statistics in terms of what I've highlighted. Some of the statistics there is that during this period, PBMR, for example, was able to contribute in the production of 54 master students, MEng and MSc, as well as about 34 PhDs and about three postdoctoral fellows. So basically, so what we're highlighting is that what PBMR has been able to do during this period is not only what one can say, where is the reactor, but is to contribute broadly in the skills development of the nuclear industry. Chair, I would request that on the corporate governance, I would request the CFO to just cover those slides for the committee.
Thank you. In terms of the corporate governance, just as an introduction, we show, first of all, who are the stakeholders that PBMR engages with. And at national level, PBMR engages with a number of government departments. On the far right of this slide, we do have an apology. The Department of Foreign Affairs is the old name, but now is the Department of International Relations and Cooperation. But if we have a look at PBMR and what we have, first of all, as our internal stakeholders, we have the employees in PBMR, and that's important to note. The asset that we talk about when we talk about the test facilities and the funding to date has been the investment that we've made incapability and incompetence for South Africa. So employees form a very important stakeholder in PBMR. The regulatory bodies include both financial governance as well as nuclear licensing. So we have a number of regulatory bodies, and PBMR itself at the moment has to comply with more than 200 pieces of legislation. It's the environment that we operate in, and it is one of the most highly regulated industries in the world. If we look at our customers and potential partners, PBMR has potential customers and partners both in South Africa as well as internationally, and we've set out in the annual report what some of these partnerships look like. That also includes partnerships that we have with some strategic suppliers that would be both in Japan, in Spain, in Germany, in Japan, as well as a collaboration that we have with iNet and Tsinghua University in China, and then also with our partners Westinghouse and Toshiba in the United States. We look at suppliers and partners as fundamental also to reducing the inherent risk in this technology. The two risks that my acting CEO mentioned was the first one is licensing. Nuclear licensing is complicated, and we have made huge shifts to be able to reduce the risk in licensing with regards to this technology. And we've also focused on how do you reduce the technology risk. And the heart of this new business model was a reprioritizing of our product so that we focus on a product which has less technology risk and more appeal to near-term customers, which is why we believe today we have a commercial offering in the business. We look at labor, which is important because the asset, as we've discussed, is the employees, as well as the pipeline that we've created from students to universities, postgraduates, masters, and inside of PBMR we also have internship programs that we run as well. Future operators, at the moment in terms of the nuclear energy policy, Eskom is the operator for all reactors in South Africa, so the relationship that we have with Eskom is fundamentally important, but as is the relationship that we have with NECSA. NECSA would be the operator in future of PBMR fuel plants, whereas Eskom at this point is positioned to be the operator of the reactors in South Africa. If we look at learning, research, and development and the institutions that we have supported, one of the aspects that we've re-looked at in our business model this year was to have a look at how do we find better synergies in South Africa with the Department of Science and Technology, the existing programs through NECSA, so that we can make sure that through those synergies we don't necessarily fund all of that off PBMR's balance sheet, but we share those in a number of programs. This does a number of things for us. It basically shares this project in South Africa more broadly than what it was, and you get broader participation, and the depth of your research and your development is more significant. We've also looked at community involvement, and these would be communities in and around the Pelindaba area, as well as communities around Kuburg and then also around the Gauteng area. But through our own research and development and technology programs, we've looked at how do you create more of an extended outreach of this technology in South Africa. It's also a point of creating national pride, since this is a national strategic project, and more broader participation in the country is of importance, starting primarily at school level. If you look at the partners in PBMR, currently we're governed by a cooperation agreement. Now, the cooperation agreement is between IDC, it's between Westinghouse, it's between Eskom and then government. Eskom hold for the other partners 100% of PBMR's shares. So when we have our annual general meeting at this point in time, it is with Eskom Enterprises, and Eskom Enterprises then holds the shares. The anticipation in the cooperation agreement was always that based on the amount of funding that each one of these partners have brought to the table, this would be capitalized at a future point in time and translated and converted into shares in PBMR. When we get to the way forward, this is also one of the aspects we will discuss, is converting the existing agreement, which is the cooperation agreement, into a shareholders agreement. That also better protects the rights and obligations of the various parties, specifically government, because government will then have a golden share in PBMR. If we look at the various departments, many of these departments that we have a relationship with are through legislative frameworks and regulations that we have to adhere to, but also because of the international footprint that this project has. If we look at starting at the top, exercise of oversight is through the Department of Public Enterprises, and then we have accountability to the investors that I've mentioned before to ensure that even though we've changed the business model, we believe that we have almost commercialized this business model, but that we have retained and created investor and shareholder value. The board of PBMR at this point in time is appointed by the investment partners, so you would get two board members appointed by IDC, you have two appointments by Eskom, you have two appointments by Westinghouse, and the residual non-executive board members are all RSA representatives, and then we've had three executive directors. The subcommittees of the board, to ensure that the board can exercise its governance over the company, is first of all the Audit, Risk and Finance Committee. The chairperson of the Audit, Risk and Finance Committee, Mr. Gert Hoos, has joined us here today. We have the Human Resources and Remuneration Committee. We have the Commercial Committee. And the Commercial Committee is a separate committee which interrogates all the placing of contracts, and those would be both commercial as well as procurement contracts in the company, and we follow a rigorous, what we call NEC contracting base. So that's an engineering form of contracting. And when we talk about how the monies have been spent over time, really what we've looked at is the contracts that we've placed for the former design. But I'll go into more detail as soon as we get up into, you know, what have we been spending the money on. Thirdly, then we have the Technology Committee. And the Technology Committee was separated from what we call the Project Delivery Committee. The company recognized more than 2 years ago that it was important to ensure that we had performance and delivery in the various projects. And when we talk about projects, there was a separate focus on the reactor design and licensing, a separate focus on the fuel design and licensing, which is the actual sphere. And then we had a project, which is the fuel plant design. So that was separate, and then the U.S. activities were also managed as a separate project. So each of these were governed by their own set of strategic objectives and performance, and this particular committee had oversight to ensure that there was performance in these various projects. The members of the board have been selected based on their specific skills requirement, based on the respective committees that they served on. And then as the executive committee, we also have a number of executive committees that help us to make sure that there is strong governance in PBMR. That would be, for example, a procurement committee, a workplace forum, employment equity committee, a job grading committee. So these are committees to ensure that we have a strong internal audit framework and a governance framework for PBMR. If we look at, as we've reported, and these are all figures that we've taken and we're reporting on in accordance with the report that you see in front of you, I do acknowledge that this information only extends until March 2009, but we can always provide you with an update of this. But fundamentally, PBMR has had a moratorium on bringing in and employing anybody during this last or the current financial period that we are in. So many of the ratios that you see today are still relevant because of this moratorium. What we have had is natural attrition where we have had resignations in this period of uncertainty. But if we start off with the skills profile of PBMR, 70% of the capability that we have in PBMR is scientists and engineers and technicians in support of the design and licensing of this particular HTR technology, which is the high temperature reactor technology. The 30% is what we call professional support. Included in this professional support are aspects of supply chain in a nuclear environment, risk management, and an enterprise-wide basis for an entity like this. So the professional support is very, very specific to a nuclear company. And what we do is, because this company is new to South Africa, we benchmark ourselves to international standards. So we have a number of independent reviews and benchmarks that are conducted on an ongoing basis to ensure that PBMR matures into a nuclear vendor. If you have a look at the International Atomic Energy Agency, they have set standards, and according to standards, it takes 15 years for any company to mature as a nuclear engineering company. At the moment, at this stage, PBMR is 10 years in the making. I will show you what we have put in place in the 10 years that we have been in existence. If you just look at our employment equity profile at the moment, we have, if you look at our target for employment equity, it's 53%. Up until March 2009, we achieved 41% against that target. And today, that is still the existing level that we have achieved. And when it comes to gender, we have 32% female is what we've achieved against a target of 35. In the rationalization process, what we will do is we will continue to use the targets that we have submitted to the Department of Labor when we fill the vacancies based on what we call is affected and unaffected positions. If we look in the year, we've had 55% of all appointments up until March 2009 were black employments, and I have stated that we have now a moratorium on employment, so we haven't employed any new employees since the 1st of April of last year. This was fundamentally because of our cost-cutting measures and a relook of what talent we had in the organization and how do we rather better use those skills to make sure that we have the necessary capabilities to continue effectively. If we get to the financial information, what I have included, and this is not in the annual report, is an answer to many questions that are asked, is how much money has PBMR spent to date and on what has that money been spent? And I think the first thing to note is that PBMR have always had what we call an unqualified audit report. We have accounted for every cent that has been put into the organization, and this we also have what we call an internal audit function as well as a risk management function. So the rigor at which we look at planning, the rigor at which we place contracts is very important in an organization like PBMR. You will see from the graph, in the current year, we've extended this information to go to 31st of December 2009. I do apologize, in the presentation and the handouts that you've had, this is the one error, it says 2010. So this is not reporting until 2010. This just takes until December 2009. What we've done is you can see the reduction in PBMR's annual spend. So the trend that we had up until 2006-2007 was a spend of between 600 and 800 million per annum, building up the capability. And it should be noted that we only took on permanent contracts, and we changed from contracting to permanent employees in the year 2005. From this 2005 date onwards, the design and licensing was basically strengthened because PBMR also put test facilities in the ground. So the costs and the increase in the costs is profiled against making sure that we have the right test facilities in South Africa to be able to support this technology so that we can in future build reactors for this country. And these are test facilities to, for example, look at the stress testing of materials, to be able to have a look at the temperatures and the pressures of which materials need to have tolerance for in the reactor. We also have test facilities for fuel laboratories, and I know that many of you have visited our test facilities, so we have these facilities in place. But the other cost is also the systems that PBMR has put in place. PBMR today has world-class systems. When we talk about systems, these are analytical tools and data that we use in the design to be able to support the licensing. That is an asset for the government today. PBMR has the ability to be able to not just do HDR technology, but in future could be positioned as South Africa's nuclear design authority as well. So if you do a transfer of technology, we would be able to take a technology and transfer that through the systems and the capability that we have. Our spend to date has been just short of $9 billion, and the makeup of this is that 30% of this has primarily, and that's the orange block, or for some of us, the red block that we see on the screen, 30% of this has gone into what we call the DPP 200. That is the licensing and the design of the reactor. The reason that this block is larger than most of the others, although the wedge is larger than most of the others, is that we actually had, for the former design, and Eskom as the future client, we had actually placed long lead items.
That pie chart, it's spent to 31st December 2009, from what period?
This is since inception, Jay. So this is...
So you should have put that, because it could...
Yes. So I tried to demonstrate in the previous slide what the profile of that spend was, and that most of that spend has happened in the last 3 years, but that's aligned with the wedge that I'm talking about at the moment, and those were the long lead items that we had placed. Those contracts today we had to responsibly close out in the design, because as mentioned earlier, the former design that we had forms a strong basis for us to have reached the point in being able to change the design today. So the capability that we built in the former design, which was more complicated from a technology and licensing perspective, allowed PBMR the space to be able to go for a design where we have reduced the temperatures, and today, based on the business case, we know that 70% of the components of this new design could be manufactured and built in South Africa. And that is what we want. We want to be able to create the jobs for this country, and we want the OEM capability. So we want to make sure that in future, we not only have the capability in the country to develop the industry, but that we could also export. I will show later that we have had an independent company come in and do a socioeconomic impact study and what the results of that were. If we could then go on to the right-hand side, the fuel plant, 13%, that is the fuel plant design and licensing cost. This would be the first fuel plant that we built, and a lot of this cost over here is human capital investment. If we look at the test facilities take up 2% of the monies that have been spent, and included in that are the fuel development laboratories. Now, when you build your first reactor, we would not license fuel out of the fuel development laboratories. There we've done prototype testing, which is also very important to build confidence in this technology. And then the remuneration is really the employment costs. So that is staff costs making up 40%, and then corporate costs making up 12% is predominantly systems and the capability and investment that we've made today in systems. It's important to note that a lifetime of a reactor is 40 years. If you do a life extension from 40 years to 60 years, the systems that we put in place today need to ensure that you are able to track not only the design of the reactor, the fuel, and the fuel plant in the next 40 to 60 years, but that you're able to go through your systems and have a look at your supply database. Were they qualified? Where did you get those components from? Because in a nuclear environment, you need to always look at responsibly servicing any reactors that you build. So the configuration control in your enterprise architecture is a significant investment and needs to be done very responsibly. Yeah, we've also benchmarked the systems and the capability that we have had to other vendor companies like Westinghouse. just taking a snippet, and I'm not going to go through the various line items, but what happened with, I was asked this question the last time I sat before the portfolio committee, what was your budget for this particular period? And the total budget that the board approved was $2.5 billion. How much was actually spent against that was... and what we've actually spent against that was 1.8. What we did in this period as well was to try and reduce the spend significantly because the objective was to start preserving cash and extending the life of the company because we knew that we had changed the business model and responsibly that needs buy-in from the investors, it needs deliberation from government, and it allows us an opportunity to discuss the future of the company. How much money has been invested in PBMR? What I've shown over here is by the end of August 2005, just over $2 billion was invested in the company, and where we sit today, it's just more than $9 billion. The $9 billion figure takes you to the end of March of this year, so it's March 2010, and this includes the last allocation of the medium-term economic framework that was given to PBMR, and that was the last $6 billion. The $6 billion that was allocated to PBMR in the last three financial periods also included an allocation for VAT, which needed to be paid back, and we also needed to manage in this money our own foreign exchange risk as well as escalation. Just the program that we spoke about, the U.S. Department of Energy program for the next generation nuclear plant, is a program that extends to 2024. This is a program which is a public-private program where the cost-sharing arrangements between the U.S. government as well as the various entities, and when we talk about the entities, this is the future owner or operator participates in these programs as well. The cost-sharing arrangements, if you start in the early phases, is where the government funds basically 100% of the licensing and the design effort. But as you move closer to what you call a construction and operating license and an early site permit, once you have a license to go and build, your off-taker then has to commit. And then you shift the funding burden and the risk from government to the off-taker. So this is normal project financing principles, and it's interesting that the time frames that we've selected for the moment, if you look at the design of this reactor and the design of our fuel plant in South Africa, is well aligned to the timing that you have in the US DOE. So we have mapped our own time frames and delivery to that of the US DOE so that we've created synergy and that we are able to obtain funding for the US DOE for work that has been conducted in South Africa. In that way, we share a lot of the funding risk as well as the technology risk. This program also participates not only in engineering, licensing, and design, but also in research and development. The fuel that we sent for testing at the Idaho labs in the United States is also currently being funded out of the NGNP at the moment.
Chairperson, do you have a pointer just to explain that graph to us?
Yes. If I have a look, what we've put on this graph is basically just two lines. So there are four buckets of funding that is usually funded out of this program. I have a mic, but I don't have the cute little red pointer. I can get one. Can I use the mic? All right. So there are four buckets. I've only shown you the two buckets on here. The first one is the nuclear heat supply system, the steam plant and what we call the balance of plant. That relates to the system of the reactor. So if you have a look at the reactor, in our terminology, we talk about what is on the nuclear island, and then we talk about the parts that are off the nuclear island. So if you look at the full reactor, which includes the building and the balance of plant and everything to be able to service the reactor, That forms part of the first half of this graph. If you start at the moment, and if I can get my mouse to behave, at the moment, the phase that we're in at the moment is this phase one. Phase one ends here after what we call financial period 2010. And then we move over into phase two. Phase two extends from this period right up until fuel load, which takes you to 2021. PBMR at the moment, together with Westinghouse and Shaw, are doing the concept design for what we call a two-reactor cogeneration plant. What that means is that we have two reactors that we will build that will share common components because that also improves the economics. This is the same design that the Chinese are building as well. So we have aligned our product to a product which can do both electricity as well as process heat. The process heat as an application could be used for desalination of seawater. You could keep it as process heat in any industrial entity. If we use Sasol, for example, instead of burning coal to make coal to liquids, they would use the heat that you get out of the reactor. So they would get a clean energy source in their industrial process. But from the one reactor, you could do electricity, and from the other reactor, you could do process heat. Now, the multiple applications in these smaller reactors is the very reason why these smaller reactors are favored internationally. So these smaller reactors do not necessarily compete with the larger conventional reactors. They actually complement them. So it's not whether you build conventional nuclear or you go for smaller reactors. You would do a combination of the two. Large conventional reactors are not used for process heat. What is unique about the smaller reactors is that they are high-temperature reactors. This is why the U.S. government is putting money into them. They can be decentralized, they can be dedicated, and they can be used for more than just electricity. So in the first phase, and if we get my mouse back, is the concept design, and then you go into your preliminary design. While you're doing that, you also have to prepare what we call your safety analysis report. And the safety analysis report is prepared with the design because through the safety analysis report, you would actually receive your nuclear license, which is your authority to be able to build. You would then do your final design. You would start with early site works. You start with construction, and then you have startup. If we look at the licensing and regulating, which we see as separate from the design process, you have your pre-application review, which commences now and continues. And Dr. Alex Zeller next to me is a licensing expert. So if we have got questions on licensing, the licensing framework today in South Africa, which is a parallel process, is now aligned with the licensing framework and paradigms that we have in the United States. Whereas before we had a single process, so your future operator would get your construction license, today we've separated the process so that you can get a license for the design, and separate to that, you can get the license to construct. If we have a look, your ESPs over here is terminology. That's just your early site permitting. Site permitting can take up to 10 years. All reactors have to be looked at very responsibly. The sites where you put reactors is important. You would have to conduct intensive tests of the geology. You would have to have a look at seismic activities, whether you can place a reactor in that particular ground. So there is a certain set of standards and norms that have to be adhered to if you do early site permitting. And then separate from that, you would have to have a look at the construction and operating license for a commercial plant. So both getting a site permit as well as a nuclear license to be able to construct is achieved through the funding mechanisms of the NGNP. So you run your design process and your licensing process parallel so that you can effectively construct. And over here, your construction period is 4 years, and that takes you to 2021. Is that sufficient?
We're not doing very good in terms of time.
Okay. I'm in your hands.
this thing is very informative, but I wonder if it's not an issue that we can engage in another meeting.
I'm very happy.
Because for me, it doesn't really impact very seriously on the annual report, because it stretches over a period of many, many years. So I would like to sensitize you that we're running very critical in terms of time. So just hop a bit.
Okay.
And don't spend too much time on this.
Okay. Thank you. What have we created then? Today, we have an advanced science and technology in South Africa. This is the asset that we've created with the funds that have been invested. We have a local nuclear industry development. We look at the social and economic transformation and growth and development, and I've got a separate slide. We look at the international value and the footprint that this technology brings. We look at the systems and the intellectual capacity, and this includes both the investment that we've made in people, the investment that we've made in systems, and the patents that we have today. And then, like other countries, like China and the U.S., we have a road to hydrogen through these high-temperature gas reactors. The graph, just very simply, shows that 30% of the components for the new reactor will be foreign, which allows us an opportunity to build at least 70% of the hardware in South Africa. If we look at the test facilities, I'm not going to go into a lot of detail. I know that you have visited many of our test facilities, but these are world-class test facilities. But the process and what we're trying to demonstrate at the bottom of this graph is really responsibly we've had the transfer of knowledge and the design into PBMR, and that took a number of years to be able to establish both the capability, the systems testing, the analysis tools, the probabilistic risk assessments that we've done. We've moved that in-depth knowledge to the process of being able to actually further the design, and this we've done responsibly together with what we call the fathers of the technology. This is technology that came from Germany, and today we still work with the experts on the design elements. We've built the test facilities. We've then gone into prototype testing, and where that leaves us at this point in time is the ability to be able to finalize this, get the design that is licensed, and then you go on into a real build program. If we look at this is the source from this is Econometrics. This was an independent assessment done on PBMR's business plan. Just very broadly, this extends to 2025. So it analyzes what we see as the markets for PBMR. And this just compares PBMR to other mega projects in South Africa, looking at the ability that this technology could have and the impact that this technology could have in South Africa, looking at aspects of GDP, turnover, balance of plants, employment, and then the dependence that you have. And that's just a measure of, you know, how many dependents are created through one single person that has direct employment because of the project. This study can also be distributed independently as well. And then on current events, I'm going to hand back to Dr. Alex Saylor just to give you a sense of, we closed off on March last year. What have we been doing with PBMR in the meantime, and what is the focus at the moment? Because there is a lot of press coverage, you know, on the rationalization process that we find ourselves in today.
Before he even takes over, you guys have not even said anything about your CEO that resigned. I don't know if it is your responsibility or whether it is the responsibility of DPE to do that. Between yourselves and DPE, we need to know what is the situation, because I think that you can't divorce that from the second part of your report. You know, I find this thing so worrying that all the time, in DPE and in entities, we learn about resignations, appointments, etc., from the media. So maybe we should create the space for you guys to tell us about the situation around your CEO. We were told that Dr. Trela is in the U.S., but in that breath, we were not told why is he now acting CEO. We don't want the reasons for resignation, but just a decency of putting before Parliament as a matter of record
that a CEO has resigned and in its place somebody has been. I find that very, 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 I want to use the mildest term that I can find. It's disturbing. It's irritating. It's actually condescending on Parliament that every time we will learn from things, and even when DPE or the entity concerned appears before Parliament, there is no necessity on their part to explain to Parliament what is happening. I'm creating this opportunity for you before we proceed on the other part of the report, and also to remind you that we have time constraints.
Thank you, Jane. We apologize that that communication was not adequate, Jane. We've had an executive team of 11 people, both the CFO and the acting CEO sitting in front of me have been part of that executive team, part of the 11 people. When the board has gone through a very serious and a thorough interrogation during the last months and specifically weeks, we realized that we need to start with a consultation process with colleagues in order to rationalize the company. And we also realized that we would not be able to proceed with an executive team of 11 people. We are now in a consultation process, and indications are that that executive team could be brought down to approximately 3 people. Dr. Tsela has agreed to act as the interim CEO because during these consultations, discussions were also held with the then CEO, Jaco Kriek. And it was then mutually agreed that he would depart because the company would be rationalized depending on the consultation process by approximately 75%. In other words, of our 800 odd people, we would be left with approximately 200, and that we could therefore not afford an executive team of 11 people. During those consultation and discussion processes, it was then decided by the then CEO that he would not proceed in any capacity. However, he would help us during these weeks, as and when required, to support the new team going forward. Dr. Tsela then, who was part of the executive team, agreed after he was approached by the board to act as acting CEO. And Lynette Mill, who was CFO, also agreed to, during this process, to continue to support us. The person who was in the U.S., Chair, sorry if I didn't express myself correctly, is not the CEO, but the chairman, Dr. Alistair Reuters. He was there on a business visit, and he only returned over the weekend, and that's why he's unfortunately not here today. But Dr. Reuters, our chairman, he's not an acting chairman. He's been the chairman for many years, and he is certainly very very well in control of this whole process, and I know that he would have been loved to be here. But I'm sorry for any misunderstanding, Chair.
I apologize to Dr. Tsela because he's not in the U.S. He's here in the meeting. Chris, do you want to say anything? You know, it's strange that when you reach a critical moment of a company, the captain of the ship is the one that says, I will ship out first. And then the board says that is okay. I don't want us to discuss those politics here, but it's a bit strange. It's very strange. DPE?
Thanks, Chair. I can't speak about discussions that the minister probably had with the chairman around this issue, but I do know from a department perspective we weren't actually involved in the moving out of the chair. But that would have happened at the minister-chairman level, those discussions. What I can say is that in terms of this rationalization, we are busy setting up an oversight panel. They started their process, and then we'll have a panel that the ministers agreed will oversee or evaluate what is actually being done in terms of the skills that are being retained to make sure that from a shareholder perspective, we are happy with the mix that they are going to be keeping and also in terms of the objectives that they've set going forward. But if you would like, I can revert back to the ministry and then come back and provide you with a written response on what exactly happened.
I'll take members on this one. You see, there are other related questions that we can ask pertaining to a CEO that resigns at this moment.
Point of order. Can I understand where we are in these proceedings? Because you're asking a number of questions on a matter which seems to have a particular interest for the chair. Are we having a full engagement, or can we move on with the other issues?
No, I have asked why they have not said anything about the CEO that has resigned, and I have expressed from the chair that is very disturbing from our part. In fact, I can even reserve my other comments for the other part, but I've noted a hand there. Whilst I take Mr. Mokoena first.
Thank you, Chairperson. I know this can be maybe unfair to my colleagues. But you've raised very interesting questions. I'm just saying, what I'm going to say may be jumping the gun a little bit, maybe unfair, because other members would always want to do this. Modestly, I should state that PBMR was accounting to the portfolio committee that I served on, 2004-2009, that was environment, affairs, and tourism. And we had a lot of issues. To your point there was that this gentleman, Yako Fellow, when he had a strat plan meeting, he actually walked out. He walked out and rebuffed the portfolio committee. He failed to account because we went to the essence of this whole thing. The PBMR is a very expensive toy. It's an experiment. It tells us it's sucking a lot of money from the fiscus and there's no direction. And he was boasting that PBMR is the only company that has got that had employed 50 PhDs. Then I said to him, you know, the person who manufactured the Apollo spacecraft that landed on the moon, Dr. Van Braun, only had one PhD. And he managed the machine because he knew what he was doing. But if you go out and put adverts and recruit PhDs in cities, you don't know what you're doing. And now we actually say, what actually happened? We foresaw. You can't put the cart in front of the horse. Put adverts and get experts, people with glamorous qualifications, into a company and say, when you are there, help us now to shape this thing that we don't know what it's going to be about. Sometime in the future, we think we'll have a nuclear reactor. So I'm sorry, Chairperson, but I'm just saying I'm not surprised at the high turnover, et cetera, et cetera. It really means that it's putting the cart in front of the horse, putting a lot of money, getting expertise without direction and vision. That's what actually happened to the PBMR. And the people who are supposed to, this thing has brought from the American guys who had actually said this thing was going to be a non-starter. But we are fascinated with it in South Africa. It's an experiment. We think it's going to be a big thing. We are reinventing the wheel, which is actually failed in other countries.
We are actually entering the discussions now. But let's give the PBMR. Can you hold our other questions? We will come back to the issues of the turnover rate. This is a very important discussion that I'm not going to scuttle. When we talk about the turnover rate, we will start with the issue of the CEO, and in that list, I'll have Mr. Van Dalen, Mr. Ambrosini first, Mr. Van Dalen, and Dr. Korenhoff. But let's receive the update on the current events first, and then we will go back to this issue. PBMR?
Chair, thank you. We note the issue that the chair has raised on the previous CEO and the comments that the portfolio committee has brought forward and the further discussion later on it. Chair, I would just discuss the issue of the current update to the portfolio committee. Basically, in December 2009, the board took a decision looking at the financial status of the organization to say going forward, the board took a policy that we'll have to curtail our expenditures and commitments to meet the available resources. The implication then, Chair, of that was that it will be necessary for the board to contemplate a large-scale retrenchment, looking at the amount of funds that the PMR had and what it still needs to do. A large-scale retrenchment. This is what, in terms of the Labor Relations Act, so this is what the board considered. And one of the other issues that was considered during that time was that PMR, the board approved that PMR could participate in the phase one of the NGNP so that there could be some income coming in. Chair, this contemplation was discussed and with an approval from the minister. An impact of that decision, Chair, was that some of the test facilities would either need to be scaled down or actually mothballed. The fuel laboratory and the technology program of the six universities would also need to be stopped or else some funding that is required to do that. Chair, what that, the implication that in terms of financial is that as of the 1st of April, this is, will be the opening balance of PBMR, and to go until 31st March 2011, that's how the cash would be spent. This is based on the contemplated restructuring of the 75%. If that doesn't happen, then you need a completely different budgeting approach. Chair, I think that the next slide, you did indicate already that there's time constraint. I'll just skip its principles. And the board took the decision that going forward, this is a strong consideration, looking at what are the primary objectives, what are some of the key issues in terms of shareholders, and what are some of the key issues in terms of customers. Basically, Chair, the primary objective is to protect the IP of the high-temperature reactor technology for government, existing investors, and some of the issues that we've listed there. Then the major thing is to secure funding from existing investors, but that will require finalization of the shareholders' agreement, and to secure customers, one of which is this participation in the NGNP program of the U.S. Chair, to end our presentation so that the committee could engage the rest of the presentation, some of the thoughts in terms of the way forward, Chair, related to saying there is value that has been created by PMR, how do we leverage that so that there is benefit to the South African economy? This is the most important thing that we want to be able to engage as an organization, to say that the South African taxpayer via the government has actually spent several billion. How do we leverage that for going forward? And looking at alignment and restructuring of the organization so that it's able to perform within constrained budget provision. And the Nuclear Design Authority, which we talked earlier, Chair, and the nuclear licensing, and looking at the design, the DPP 200, aligning it with the NGNP, and continued product and customer alignment. Chair, this is the essence of what we're saying, is that as a company going forward, we want to be able to rethink and say, what is the leveraging of the value that's already been created? How do you convert that value so that it's to the benefit of South Africa's economy? Chair, I would pause there, and we will take the details in the questions. Thank you.
Let me take members first. To say members, we have received a report with two subsections. The last part was this one of current events. Okay. Now, I would like members to advise me whether we are going to take. I've noted you, Mr. Ambrosini, whether we are going to take first presentation, questions for the first presentation, or whether we can intertwine the questions irrespective of from which section of the report they're coming from. Mr. Ambrosini.
One flows into the other.
So we will ask them just as we want to ask them without saying these ones belong to this section of the report or these ones belong to this section of the report. I had three hands that I had noted. I'll start with those three hands, and then I'll take and I'll add more hands to those three hands. I had Mr. Van Dalen. Sorry, it was Mr. Ambrosini first. Mr. Van Dalen. Dr. Van Wyk. Sorry, Dr. Korenhoff. Van Dalen. Dr. Korenhoff. I now see Mrs. Bowman. Mr. Nana. Mr. Khololo. Hello, Dr. Van Dijk. Seen every member? Okay. Mr. Mkwena?
Yes, come a bit later stage, Chairperson.
Okay.
In the second round.
All right. I will put you in brackets here. You might decide at that time to speak, and then I'll speak after you. In that order, please, Mr. Ambrosini.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I need to step back, and for my own sake and for the sake of those who are equally confused as I am, to understand what happened. This company started for the purpose of building us a nuclear plant, which would provide us nuclear electricity. As I understand it from the presentation, what we are now looking at is this company producing technology and a regulatory and a design framework and possibly nuclear fuel. These three items to be supplied to another company, which from the private sector will then build and operate a nuclear plant. If I also understand the presentation correctly, the time when the private company will be enabled by the process undertaken thus far to begin building and operating the nuclear plant, which gives us the nuclear energy, will be 2024. Now, if this is correct, my concern, which I too, like Mr. Mokwena, envisaged many years ago, is that the process has been hijacked, basically by the intervention of Westinghouse in this project, and by the desire of bringing this entire project in compliance with standards, procedures, and time frame in the United States, which serves different purposes. A benign purpose is that the product which then emerge out of this process, whether they're IP products or regulatory design products, et cetera, can be marketed back in the United States. And there is a less benign angle, is that reducing the competitive effect that this much safer technology would have in the United States market if proven immediately, in that it would render a number of existing nuclear reactors technologically obsolete in terms of U.S. law. The fact is that the Chinese saw through this, they came in, they gave us money, they took the technology, said goodbye, and if I understand it, they will leave these nuclear reactors up and running, producing electricity way before we even begin putting down bricks and mortar. So the first question is, am I understanding it correctly or am I making a terrible mistake in reading the situation? The second question, if I am correct, what is missing in that picture is how long do we need to carry you over and at what cost? If it is 2024, I mean, we are in for a penny, we're in for a pound, but how large is that pound? Do we have a cost estimate of getting to a point where this becomes self-sustaining, possibly from the licensing fees of the actual builders? The third question is that these things of a design licensing authority, with all the benefit of my ignorance, seems a little a far-stretched notion. People don't come with new nuclear design every day. It took us 25 years to
And with this will take us 25 years to 2024 to consider one. And having this machinery continuing to produce more designs for future technology doesn't seem to be feasible. Then the last question on your pie, the 12% for corporate governance, which translates to R1 billion, that's over and above remuneration. It's over above equipment. It's over above anything else in the pie. So what's the R1 billion actually for, from a concrete viewpoint? It seems puzzling. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thanks. Mr. Van Dalen?
Yes, Madam Chair, thank you. When you build a company, it's like building a house. You put the foundations down and you build the walls and you put the roof on. Now, I need to know, this new restructuring and the new plan and the new financing model that you have now, was it going to happen anyway, or is the reason for it, how did the minister term it, drawing a line through PBMR? Was that the reason, and why haven't you done it earlier if we are saving a lot of money now, and was it not necessary to save money before? Could this not be seen as a wasteful or unnecessary expenditure, as when you build a house and you stop before you put on the roof, then you go bankrupt, you know, and then you don't have any more money, so the house, the walls just stand there and nothing rests. And then I need to ask you something. In your presentation, you didn't talk a lot about it, but was the energy intensive user group? Those are the 38 largest companies that use about 60% of the energy in South Africa. And I need to know how are they cooperating with you? And see, the problem that I have is what incentive do they have to cooperate with you, because they are getting electricity at below cost prices, and sometimes nearly for free if the aluminium market goes right down. So what incentives has it got to do to spend a lot of money with you to, and you seem to put it in your program that they are like a possible savior of this program. And then I need to know, why did private investors stop investing in PBMR at 2007? Why, you know, if you have a company and did they see the writing on the wall already that time, or was it just that government had more money and that it was an easy place to plug into for more money? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. The first question, on page 17 of your report, you talk about your realignment of your business and your product for PBMR to become a nuclear engineering company. But in that, so the next paragraph, you say this: obviously the plan cannot work without the support of the South African government. But you have the support of your stakeholders, your investors, further on in your report. But at the same time, you've indicated that on the 31st of March, that's next Wednesday, the support, financial support from the South African government will come to an end, if I understand it correctly, the 1.5 billion, roughly. Now, the question is, how are you going to address your financial ability to proceed with your mandate? That is the first question. Number two, on page 27, you talk about various shareholder agreements. Are your shareholder agreements all in place with the various shareholders that you've talked to? Then, can I go to two more specific questions? A detail, because we're evaluating the current report, not talking about the future. On page 34, one of your annual report, on page 34, one of your directors, attendance is 20%. She is also a chairperson of one of your committees, I think the Project Delivery Committee, which you've, there the attendance of the chairperson was 50%. Is this person still a director? What's the reason for this low attendance? What did you do about it? If she's still there, what have you done to rectify the situation? On page 100 of your annual report, it is the directors and executive managers' remuneration. Now, if you look at the chairperson and the non-executive directors, you come to a total of 2.77 million for 2009. If you look at the executive directors and managers for 2009, a total of 23 million, more than 23 million. I'm not. You can see the individual amounts paid to directors. My question is, are these remuneration, the amounts you pay to your directors, is that in line with the guidelines supplied by DPE? And if not, why not? And my last question, which I referred to earlier on page 74 of your director's report, you really, on the going concern, you said you wanted to make an assessment of the going concern of PBMR. How far have you developed now, after this all this event, the way forward, your budget for the 2010-2011 financial year? I see you have a cash, your budget for cash surplus of, is it 14 million? 14 million? Yeah, 14 million cash surplus. And going further here, are you satisfied with your downscale of your directors, your 11 executive directors to 3, with your downscaling of employees, with your potential closing down, mothballing? Are you satisfied that for the foreseeable future, that you've re-engineered yourself, that you've scaled down to a certain extent, you look at the financial situation that's facing you as from the 1st of April 2010, and that you're comfortable to say to this committee, going ahead with all your stakeholders, your shareholders, that we can keep the core capability of people with your expertise knowledge, and that there is a future in the nuclear engineering company that you strive to be. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Perhaps just left for me to ask would be, in the appointment of your new CEO, have you got a time frame for that? Have you got something in mind? And then perhaps just related to this 11 executive members, we've already heard that the CEO himself resigned and pulled out of his own accord. What is going to be the process to reduce the balance now down to 3, your plan for that? And then I just want to know, in your plan, my understanding, and you pointed out that in starting up something, you know, sort of 15 years is a reasonable period, and you've had 10. Are you confident in your restructuring and everything that you are busy with at the moment and the plans that you are making forward that, say, in 15 years' time, you are going to be up and running and sustainable yourself? And then perhaps just the last thing I need to say, and with your restructuring, we do note in your report the lack of female representation in your board and your executive members. You've got, I think, is there one or two on your board of females? So, you know, what is your policy in that regard, please? Thank you.
I have put you on the list, Mr. Mkwena. Mr. Nana?
Sorry. Thanks, Chairperson, and my apologies for arriving late. Mr. Chairperson, can I just say that my view about PBMR could be that of a novice, could be that of a layman. But I have this feeling that PBMR is nothing else but an effort of it's a good effort with good intentions of people who work at PBMR. But again, I may not be able to substantiate what my allegation, but I've got this feeling that, you know, you you sometimes get people that are at PBMR only to feed their research and invention quest. And I'm saying to feed their research and invention quest. And unfortunately that comes at a very high price. To date, more than 8 billion rands has been, I mean, until 2010, 8 billion rands would have been spent on PBMR. And then I'm afraid there isn't much to show for it. Now, coming to the downscaling or rationalization of the company, I would want to know that seeing that about 70%, 75% of the current personnel will be laid off. I may have missed this because I came late. At what cost will this come? Because I will imagine, you know, you have severance packages, you have retrenchment packages. At what cost will this cost the company? And eventually the taxpayer. And lastly, attached to that, Chairperson, I would like to know, given the reality that South Africa is constantly facing a lack of skilled personnel. Here you are with about 600 plus people about to be laid off. Some of them have resigned, just like the CEO. I know there is nothing much you can do about them when they have left your employ. But are there plans in PBMR to ensure that the investment that we have made as a country in developing skills and sharpening skills of those individuals is not lost to foreign land? Because I will imagine our competitors in China, our competitors in Europe, will gladly snatch them, and will be back to square one. What are the plans to ensure that we retain them in the system, even if you redeploy them elsewhere, for a lack of better word, Chairperson, you redeploy them elsewhere in some of these parastate health? Will they be retained within the country? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. We've got a few questions here to ask. On the PBMR shareholders, I'd be interested to know, Chairperson, as to how much is government share there, Westinghouse, IDC, and Eskom. That would be the first one. The second one, actually, Chair, will be on the funding of PBMR, since PBMR is financially constrained, how is this affecting the employees in the company? And do you have future plans of retrenching more of these employees? Maybe another one would be a comment that about the awarding of the contract by a US-based company. Is it true? Yeah, I'd like to congratulate you for that, of that award that we've won from the United States. I was just congratulating them because earlier on they reported that they've won an award. So I just want to congratulate them for that. And then I heard also that you are able to convert seawater to potable water. That is very good. And I'm looking at this, Chair, in that, you know, since you are a water-scarce country, is it possible for them in the future to
convert seawater for other uses, like drinking and all that. Yeah, because they've got the technology, from what I heard. Or they're experimenting with the technology. Okay, I wish you well on that one. And the last one, Chair, will be on the resignation of the CEO, Jaco Krill. I wanted to find out from them the reasons for him to resign. If they could just tell this committee the reasons why the CEO resigned. I think that will be the last one. Thank you.
Dr. Van Dijk?
Chairperson, thank you very much. Chairperson, taking into account that on page 38 of your annual report, it's been reported that PBMR is a long-term project. With energy, you have to talk 30 to 50 years forward. So it seems as if the PBMR is a very, very, very long project. Chairperson, with the background that PBMR, as per your presentations last year and the year before, will only deliver 165 megawatt by 2015. 165 megawatt compared to a coal power station of 4,000 megawatt. And taking into account the billions of rands that government already pushed into the organization. So I want to know, will the results of 165 megawatt by 2015 be a reality, and will we then have to wait another 30 to 50 years for further development? Chairperson, then also on page 93 of your annual report, you reported that the research and development expenses for in the past financial year was just over 1 billion. But what worries me is that the other administrative expenses amounts almost to 1 billion, while your core business should be research and the provision of nuclear electricity. The administrative expenditure seems to be almost exactly the same of your research expenditure. Chairperson, then on page 100 of the annual report, it's been mentioned that 11 members of the executive directors and executive managers received salaries of almost 23 million per annum. 11 people that received 23 million per annum. I just want to know whether that is the going rate of public enterprises, and if it's determined by PBMR internally, what is the basis for this salaries of more than almost 1 million per person per annum? Thank you, Chair. It is mentioned 23 million on page 100 for 11 people. Yeah, it amounts almost to 2 million per annum. Yeah, and so if we can just have some sort of direction for what is the reasons for that remuneration. Thank you, Chair.
I do not want to burden this presentation, this meeting, with a lot of views. Yeah, I do. But I'm just trying to find a way out. I want to suggest, Chairperson, that some of us are, speaking for myself, I'm very disillusioned with PBMR. And some of us are very articulate, vocal about it, that this is, I think, was ill-conceived. Right, so I say that PBMR was an ill-conceived gimmicky project. We said so 5 years ago. So it mustn't be a shock to those who are just coming in now. And they avoided, they were pussyfooting, they came up with glossary reports, et cetera, et cetera. And without sounding very clever and clairvoyant, I'm not a scientist, but you see, the essence, the integrity of the whole thing was dubious from the word go. It appeared like it's just something that's just put on with a beautiful camouflage to make money quickly and to get the number of clever people there onto this web. When they take the money, the future generations will see what to finish with it, how to finish. Now, the problem is, and as members have just said, what runs across the thing is that the sustainability, the integrity of PBMR and its sustainability. Would like a situation where future MPs come here and they say, but see, we had a bunch of clever people here, whatnot. Couldn't they see what we are now seeing here? You see. So, Chairperson, I know I'm speaking beyond the scope of the report itself. And I want to suggest a way of thought, by way of thought, that we should actually have a heart-to-heart discussion, a workshop with PBMR. Pull everyone together there. Come up there, you know, very formal and discuss, you know, have an eyeball-to-eyeball discussion. Very, very frank. And, you know, I don't, basically don't see the future of PBMR. It was started perhaps with noble intentions, but the essence of this whole, the integrity of this whole thing here, it just doesn't exist. It appears to be sometimes imported from people who have actually run away and from it because it was a failure, but we got fascinated and said, gee, let's experiment. So we should actually admit and say it's an experiment, and because of the experiment, you mustn't go too top heavy with an experiment. That is a grab we have. There's nothing wrong. Nobody can begrudge you for experimenting, but you do not put all your resources in the experiment, go top heavy, and burden future generations with a lot of money. It's a moral question. It's a scientific project, but it's got a lot of moral, fiscal obligations. So I want to suggest that let's wrap up the report, Chairperson, quickly, and then make the best of it. But after this, we must actually have an honest workshop, heart-to-heart, and just say, look, you know, we mustn't fool the public about this whole thing, because at the end of the day, we are parliamentarians, we do constituency work, there are elections next year for local government and beyond, et cetera, et cetera. And they're going to ask us, what have people achieved? We cannot come up with a closer report of PBMP, because it does not relate to the people on the ground. What PBMP, there must be credibility, what to do. If a thing does not work, we must be open and say, the concept was good, but man, look, it was an experiment, and let's cut our losses.
Mr. McQueen, I've got a number of questions. I'll try to see if I can link them together. If I may just respond to Mr. McQueen's, before I go to my questions, proposal about the workshop with PBMR. I wonder what this workshop, I agree with the idea of the workshop, but I wonder if we should hold it with the PBMR. I wonder whether this workshop about the PBMR should not be with the shareholder. I don't think that it should be with the PBMR. Yeah. Okay. You agree that it should be with the...
Absolutely, Chairperson. You've just put words in my, taking the wind out of my sails, mother. All stakeholders put together, anybody else who's interested, the stakeholders come here. And without jumping the gun, PBMR is 100% shareholder because ESCOM is owned by the government. PBM is the baby of ESCOM. So other people who play these stakeholders, I can't understand how they came and bought into the 100% of the government when this should have been done through Parliament. It should have been done, this shareholding, through the back door.
Now, let me go to my questions and my concerns, and there are many. I want to go back to the issue of the resignation of the CEO before I go to other strategic issues. Having spent so much money on this experiment, where the CEO actually is on record in the public domain as having said that he entered the PBMR knowing nothing about nuclear technology, and he now, and it's a month ago, his resignation was not even on the cards. He has acquired immense knowledge, and is internationally competitive as a result. Now, you spend billions of rands of South Africans who are very poor, who've got so many needs, into a project like this, and put a person to lead the project who knew nothing about the technology. At the end of a number of years, himself says, I'm internationally competitive and competent, and then exit. We've spent
spent our resources to train the person who knew nothing about nuclear technology. At the end of the day, he can just exit, irrespective of the amount of money that we took from South Africans to put into the institution that he headed. The other thing is, are there exit interviews that are happening? Do we know where he's heading to with that expertise that we have put, that he has gained because of our efforts as a nation and as a country? The other thing that worries me, somewhere in your presentation, you say that you want to safeguard the intellectual property of government and other shareholders. And IP is never co-shared, co-owned. You can never have an intellectual property that is co-owned. Now, if you are the major shareholder, you must tell us which IPs are ours and which IPs belong to Westinghouse, which IPs belong to what's your other partner? Eskom, IDC. Those ones I'm comfortable with because they are internal, you know. But when it comes to, because for the issue that Mr. Ambrosini is raising, when it comes to foreign interest into a project the size of PBMR that we have put so much money in, you have to safeguard your national interest and your IP. So once IP is just said, it's IP of us and them in one breath, it's worry. Maybe this workshop will also ask, we must have for the, if we agree to it, with the shareholder, which is the government, would address exactly that issue. Who actually owns, is a major owner of, or the sole owner of the intellectual intellectual property?
Can I just interrupt?
Sorry?
Can I just interrupt you?
Yeah.
On Westinghouse, I want to propose that this committee should dig a little bit deeper in case we find Chancellor House again.
That's a nice commercial break. Okay. With the issue of the CEO, not only the CEO, in your presentation you also talk about the issue of skills transfer, how much you've generated skills, PhDs, and all those things. But I wonder, to what extent are you denting the lack of skills of South Africans who were historically marginalized? When I look at your board, I don't think that you have begun. And I wonder what it looks like in your middle in the middle of your structure and all those things. And also, when you say you are going to massively retrench, we know the obvious culprits. We know who is going to be obviously retrenched. Is the historically disenfranchised, historically disempowered, historically descended, economically marginalized. And those people happen to be black and they happen to be African. I want to raise this point that I wanted to raise it. During the years when PBMR was very lucrative, the CEO was what he was. And at the point where it is being rationalized, where its future of funding is questionable, the CEO takes a different shape and form. Is it really? I'm not questioning the capability of anybody. Dr. Sele is a highly capable man.
What about his form?
Form. That's another good commercial break. Now, this award about from the U.S., they must, of course, give you an award because their national interest to safeguard their continued existence within the PBMR in this republic. So that's a very clever thing to do. My other question is,
how much the four months that you exceeded to table your annual report, how is it going to impact on your other annual report? Because you spent 4 months getting ready for, you know, getting ready for a belated. Is it likely to have any negative impact in your forthcoming annual report or not? In terms of your highlights, if I may conclude my remarks, move towards conclusion of my remarks. In fact, before I speak about the highlights, in that slide where you projected the next 25 years, and then in the middle of that period you say decision, the corporate, this thing that looks like this. No, it's not this one, it's another one. The one that you were using, we asked you to use a pointer to. Yes. You somewhat miss in the middle of those things to say that a decision must be taken. And it's a few years down the line. That makes me think of who are you involved with currently in terms of shaping the future of the PBMR? Are you involved with government as the actual owner of the PBMR? Is it government that is shaping that future centrally, together with government, the role players in government, or is it largely informed by your external funders? I'm asking this question because government has began to pronounce on the nuclear path going forward, and that government decision is not mapped in the far distant future that you have mapped the decision that you say should be taken. So I'm just wondering in my mind, if government owns you, who actually calls the shots in terms of your future? Is government at that center, or is it yourself and your foreign funders who actually determine your future? Of your highlights, you have shifted from one thing to the other. Like Mr. Ambrosini says, that's how we understand you to have, you yourself, you know that you are designed to be one thing, you changed to become one, today you are envisaging to become another. But can we count as a highlight that you have generated skills, your impact on skills development? Put aside your PhDs, because most of them, I'm sure you recruited at master's level or at and put them to the PhD. And that's, to what extent have you impacted on skills development of the ordinary South African? Because I think also that is where you must be gauged. Because if you spend 8.7 billion rent within how many years was it? Less than five. 10 years. In 10 years or 5 years. No, I'm saying whether it's 11 years or whether it is 5 years. When you spend that kind of money, you cannot escape asking the question, with this kind of money, to what extent have I generated skills which are so necessary for ordinary South Africans, not for the lucky ones who manage to anyway acquire either a junior degree or a senior degree anyway before they enter you. It will depend on how you do with the answering of these questions, but before you answer the questions, members, do we agree that we need a workshop about the PBMR with the shareholder? If need be, we will decide with the shareholder whether to involve other stakeholders. Dr. Ambrosini?
Mr. Madam Chairman, we are trapped in a contradiction which emerged last Friday after you left and the minister highlighted. The minister herself and we as a portfolio committee are not the policy makers. In each segment, the policy is made by another department. In this case, is the Department of Energy. They determine the energy policy and the extent to which nuclear should be part of the equation. And the minister highlighted the need for us to engage on each SOE together with the relevant portfolio committee, which determines the policies. And that's one consideration. The other consideration that perhaps the presenters can give us, I think we need to be sensitive to the fact that this is, whether we like it or not, and at the time I advised against, it is an international joint venture with one of the largest electricity conglomerates in the world. So what we do here, what we say here, should not, or a workshop, should not be perceived in a way that can be counterproductive to what they are trying to project with their partners, with future investors, etc. So I think we almost need their guidance to make sure that we don't upset their own project with sending out the wrong message.
Let me address myself to your first point. I agree with you and the observations that were made by the minister. When I say shareholder, I don't mean DPE. Shareholder is government in its entirety, including the policy department, including our department and the ministry. So that's why I use the word shareholder. I meant it in its totality, meaning government centrally, the ministry and department of energy, the ministry and department of public enterprises, and other related, yes, ESCOM itself, etc. So that was my proposition. Do we agree that that is the way to go? I just want us to tidy that up as a decision. Any seconder to that proposal?
Qualification that we take the initiative to host this.
Okay. We take the initiative to host that to, with the shareholder broadly defined, yes. Any seconder? I've seen two hands. Mr. Nana?
I'm supporting Chairperson.
Ms. Van Dalen?
Yes, Madam Chair, we must just make sure that Friday we also listened that the Minister wanted to have a workshop around the public enterprises to see if they are still viable and if, and this would fall into that category to find out which we keep and which we get rid of or whatever it is. So we must make sure that we don't mix in with that discussions.
Actually, that discussion was our own discussion that the minister has brought into, the head of state has brought into. So I don't think that they are mutually exclusive. We will see how we plan the two so that we don't duplicate. This proposal has been seconded, and we will be considerate of what you are saying, Mr. Van Dalen. Dr. Kornoff, is it on the same matter?
Yeah, on the same matter. I think the pronouncement by the minister on state-owned entities and the future reporting to DPE is a matter that we need to take into consideration. Secondly, the president announced earlier independent review of all state-owned entities, much wider than the 9 reporting to DPE. And I think we should also take that into consideration. I don't think we should necessarily reinvent the wheel. And let's look, take confidence of the reviews and investigations taking place at the moment. And at the end of the day, we're all here to make a better South Africa for all our people. And to downgrade or to jump the gun on any of issue, I think will not serve necessarily. So let's take the proposal forward, but let's just be sensitive that there are other processes also on the go. And let's not cross that and derail and most of these, including PBMR, you are in desperate need of foreign funding, if I understand correctly.
We're in the discussions now. Let's just conclude on the issue of the workshop. We are saying that we will hold the workshop cognizant of the fact that the shareholder is not cognizant of the fact that there are other processes, and we're not seeking to reinvent the wheel. We will make sure that this dovetails into those processes so that we are not duplicating and we are not subtracting from those processes. So we'll recognize those processes. That's the point I wanted us to conclude. Having done this, I want PBMR to answer the questions we have put before you, and they are many.
Chief, I can start with the ones that you summarized, and my two colleagues will, of course, continue and also add to what I've said. And I want to start with the point that you started with, Chair, the resignation of the CEO. I want to state that very clearly, that resignation did not happen through a letter on our desk. Some weeks ago, when we started with serious consultations, that consultation process naturally included the CEO, and there were discussions with him about the new face of the company, the revised workings and strategies going forward, the company being shrunk by 75%, if not more. And through those discussions and consultations, it was then mutually agreed that that he would depart. We do not know where he is going. There are certainly no offers, other jobs, locally or abroad, available as far as we know. Jaco Kriek, we believe, and the board has a lot of respect for him and for his abilities as a manager, a professional manager. He's certainly not a nuclear physicist. And by his departure, we wouldn't lose the nuclear and the IP skills which the current acting CEO, for example, has. He's not a nuclear expert, and even after 6 years in that job, I believe, although he is a good CEO, he was a good CEO, and the board has respect for him, his departure wouldn't take with it in-depth IP or nuclear secrets. In respect of retrenchments, Chair, what you've said is very important, and every time we meet, and we meet often these days, employment equity in terms of both race and gender is certainly a very, very important issue to the PPMR board, very much driven by our chairman, Dr. Reuters, and certainly a very important consideration in the selection of who stays and who would be allowed to leave. Naturally, it's a very important balance to be maintained, because we need to maintain and retain the skills. We need to deliver on the NGNP, but we do not use that as an excuse to only retain white males. We need the balance, and we go out of our way to ensure that we are well represented by the historically disadvantaged, even in our post-restructuring corporation. The annual report, we do not envisage it to be late again, Chair, and the fact that it was late by 4 months does not mean it will be late at all, and I want to give this committee the assurance that in terms of the PFMA, it will be submitted to Parliament before the end of August. And then just the last point from my side at this stage is the salaries of the colleagues who include the two sitting here. It is certainly in line with the DPE guidelines. Some of those, as the notes indicate, are also payments in respect of the previous year, because we pay bonuses in 1 year relating to a previous year. It is in line. That is one of the things, Chair, which is very thoroughly considered by the Remuneration Committee, one by one. And we believe that those, although it looks high on paper, we believe for the skills and the expertise which those colleagues brought, they were fairly remunerated, not excessively. But yes, indeed, they are in line with the DPE guidelines.
Thank you, Chair, and thanks to our chairperson of the Audit Committee. Chair, we've taken note of the questions. We will endeavor to respond to them. Some of the questions require detailed information, and if the Chair would allow us that, we can forward that to the committee where there are specific things that needs to be sent to the committee.
We just need a deadline for that. When are you able to send us back those that the answers to those ones that you will not be able to? Because there is a habit developing. People come here and say we will respond in writing, and then it takes ages to dig out the responses from them. What amount of time will you need? 2 weeks?
We could work within that deadline, Chair.
Okay. Let me give you 3 weeks, because anyway we are about to write. So when we come back from where we come from, we should find our answers waiting for us on our desk. That is 15 working days.
Thank you, Chair. We will endeavor to do that so that we can give meat to all the questions that have been raised. And the chairperson of the Audit Committee has covered some of the questions. We will cover them together with the CFO, the other question. Chair, I think one of the questions that the committee has looked at and actually taken a decision on is a rethink in terms of PBMR. Chair, that's a decision of the committee, and I think we would welcome that. In my, where I'm sitting, I would say there was vision 1999, there's got to be a vision 2010. Somebody has to say there was a vision in 1999 of pebble bed technology or high temperature reactor. Is that should that still be the same vision? What should be the new vision? So I think that kind of deliberation will also highlight those important things. Chair, in terms of the specific questions, the one question related to change in business product business model. This was asked by the MP, Ms. Ambrosini, and the question entirely said, is the understanding correct? I think the understanding was there was an original intent, which was to build. Now there seems to be a new intent, which is a design authority licensing fuel, and you are saying, why is that the case? Chair, that understanding is correct, as we showed earlier with the two diagrams, that this was the intent. And I would just highlight, Chair, that the reasons have been varied. One of the reasons was to look at the market. The original product mix was electricity only. Now, when we look at what the market is looking for, there was need for broadening. We had that as a product, but the emphasis was on the electricity only. So we then said, broaden that, not just to look at a product that's addressing electricity needs, but look at other, like the process heat, where you can then use the temperature, the heat, the steam for several things, like it's been explained. So that's been an understanding. But further to the market, Chair, there was also the understanding of the financial constraints. I'll use that word as constraints, or I could say financial. The MP was asking whether it's been hijacked by somebody else or not hijacked by somebody else. And our comment here would be it's been more the funding constraint that has led to the rethink and say, if you were to use what we have, let's look at something. For example, the focus on the indirect cycle is more towards technology that's already been tested. Versus what we call first-of-a-kind technology. So one would be near to the market than one would have been, but which doesn't mean what we've developed all the time has been lost. So there's been a mix of reasons why there's been change, both financially and also looking at the market. I think, I don't know whether you want to add, CFO, on that, because that was the broader question about change in terms of product. That's what I wanted to just address first. Yes, product and focus. Chair, I would move to another question that related to the funding, the monies, and I would ask to we'll pick them because they came from different members of the portfolio committee.
Thank you, Dr. Taylor. The one question was the 12% corporate cost. Why is that so high, and what is that made up? That looks at the corporate costs over the period. Now, inside of your corporate costs is very importantly your IT costs, which is your hardware and your software. We also include rentals in that. We include licensing fees in that and everything else to be able to develop and design the product. So it would include travel. Those costs are also benchmarked to other companies as well. If you have a look at these costs, we look at them very carefully to make sure that we reach full efficiencies in these costs. In our training and development programs, which is also part of this cost, we have a look at a mechanism of how do you train the trainer. So if we get, for example, training that we receive internationally, we train one person, that person is then responsible to bring the knowledge back into the organization and to train others. We also look for synergies working together with other SOEs in how do you reduce, for example, insurance costs, because most SOEs rely on brokers for advice. So what we do is we discuss what we have as an insurance strategy with Eskom based on their experience as well as NACMA, and we look at smarter ways of looking at cover to make sure that we can reduce these costs as well. So all of these costs are looked at very carefully inside of this corporate area, and we have a look at how can we continually reduce these particular costs, because efficiencies to attract any further investors does become important. The other cost, or the other question relating to cost, was how long does this take and how much is it going to cost? Well, one of what we've done is re-looked at the whole, what we call the funding model. If you have a look at the reactor, what we have said is we are not going to go and raise funding internationally for PBMR. That is not viable for the stage that we are in at the moment. Our object and our hope is still to be able to demonstrate and to build the first commercial reactor for pebble technology in South Africa. What we would like to do is we would like to capitalize the contributions that have been made to PBMR, which means that if you translate that today, the government of South Africa has 81% of the shares in PBMR. 5% of the shares are held by IDC, the Industrial Development Corporation. 9 to 10% of the shares are held by Eskom Enterprises, and the remaining 4% is held by Westinghouse, and this is Westinghouse in the US. That would be the translation. What we're saying in an affordable funding model is to make sure that the government protects and owns all the IP through a golden share in a shareholders agreement, and then to dilute government stake in PBMR, because there's sufficient control through the PFMA and the golden share to introduce more investment into PBMR. If you believe that we have created value over the past 10 years through the programs and the test facilities, the competence and the capability that we've built in the company, a large portion of share premium could be injected into the company by bringing in further investment. But I do go back to the chair's earlier comment. The discussion of nuclear in South Africa has to be held. The discussion of who is South Africa going to partner with in the long term is important if you have a look at shareholding in PBMR. You would want to create synergy between South Africa's overall nuclear program and the investment in PBMR. So there is sufficient space for, whereas government have done the majority of funding to date, there is sufficient space and significant value that has been created to date to be able to bring in new investors. And that is one of the funding mechanisms we have actually modeled, and we have submitted that to DPE. Further to that, we have said that for the first reactor, since it is no longer first of a kind, and we believe that this would be a reactor where you could buy components throughout the world if we cannot build our own supply base. You would be able to also sign a sales agreement with a consortium of customers in South Africa. This high-end or the electricity energy intensive users group in South Africa have an interest in PBMR, but that would have to be in discussions with government as well. It would have to be a model where the risk is shared. So you would have an offtake agreement or a sales agreement for the either the process heat or the electricity which is purchased, and they would pay for a portion of the first price. And then the third element to what we've seen as a funding model would, from about 2016 to 2020, once the technology has actually been proven, which is why we're collaborating with iNet in China, is to start to introduce a low level of debt. If you start to introduce capital market debt onto PBMR's balance sheet, it could be debt that would be refunded in at least a duration of between 15 and 20 years. So with those three elements, we believe that we have a funding model which is viable. But in all of this, we continually speak of the strategic support of government, because you have to be able to unlock and leverage off the value that we have created to date. So I believe the workshop is important, and the workshop to be able to understand where are we, what is the value, and how do you use that value to be able to reduce predominantly the funding risk. The strategies that we have put on the table significantly reduce the technology and the licensing risk, which is why a partnership here is very important.
On the financial questions.
Okay.
We're going back to
it. Dr. Kurnopoyo,
financial questions
answer? Okay. Chair, thank you. It just gives us an opportunity to be thinking some of the answers while the other looks at the other question. yes, Chair, it definitely could. Chair, I just want to take some of the questions. There were several questions by members that related to the contemplated rationalization or restructuring process. Chair, I just first start that questions by saying it's a very difficult time for PBMR. It's not an easy time on the ground with the employees. There was a question about how are the people feeling with this. It's really not an easy time, both from the board level, the chair of the audit committee says that the board members is quite involved to ensure they understand the process. It's very low, Chair. It's difficult to walk in the corridors and see people contemplating that they are not sure what will be happening to them should this contemplated retrenchment actually go ahead. What we understand that TPE, like it was explained earlier by the DDG, that there is an oversight panel that the TPE is putting to ensure some of the questions that were raised by members actually captured. For example, South Africa is talking about the shortage of skills, in particular in the fields of science, technology, and math. And then on the other side, one would see an organization that's a state-owned entity actually shedding some of the skills. This is where the panel is coming in to say what is possible, what can be done with the skills, either within the nuclear industry or in other related industries that need scientists and engineers. Chair, from the PBMR side, what I can just raise in terms of this is that the board had to come to this point based on funding challenges, Chair, that with the funding that PBMR currently has, what can still be the optimal size of an organization that can still be funded with the money that's there to pursue at least the project that is the NGNP. So it's a difficult season, Chair. We do not know how the committee could actually engage into that, but it's currently under consultation. We will know once the labor relations period, actual period, has come to an end, what eventually happens. Yes, Chair. What basically happened is that a proposal has been tabled to the employees. Some are represented by unions, some are representing themselves. And so there is currently a consultation to say what are options, what are alternatives. The employees and the unions have raised several options that they think can be considered. And this will be looked at. The board has formed actually a restructuring subcommittee of the board to actually spend on a weekly basis to discuss and see what is happening.
Have you quantified the financial implications of that process?
Yes.
That was his question.
Yes, Chair. The cost of the what we call the rationalization is included in the budget for the following year. The assumptions that we have used is the packages, the severance packages, and the notice period that is required in terms of the Labor Relations Act. So what we have done is we've used the Act to be able to guide us in the provisions that we've made. But naturally, during this consultation period, we have to consider a number of alternatives. So all the options that we've been through as the board and the management will be tested and will be deliberated with employees to do everything possible to try and reduce the extent and the scale. I have a number of other financial.
Are you at liberty to share with the committee how much will this cost?
Chair, what we can say is that when you look at the Labor Relations Act, it says that from the date that somebody is given notice or retrenched after the process followed or due process is followed, you give somebody 1 week for every completed year of service. So that is deemed the severance package. You will pay them all their leave pay and other benefits that are due contractually to that person, and you would give them 1 month's notice.
Probably let me rephrase my question, Jefferson. Have you quantified?
Yes, Chair. If you take all these costs into account, the severance package that we are budgeting for at the moment is an average of 1 month's salary. If you take all the employees and you look at their effective start dates and you work out a completed week for every year of service, that averages out at about 55 million. What we've also done is we've had all of these assumptions as well as the calculations independently audited as well, so that we can make sure that since we have severe funding constraints, all the figures have been double-checked and all of our assumptions have been checked as well.
And for 600 workers.
Yes, Chair, what we need...
Sorry, Chair, your staff complement was 800. Now you are retrenching 600 to retain 200. Now, the 55 million retrenchment package, equivalent to the settlement of 600 staff.
There we go. Mr. McQuarrie, what we've said is that the provision that we've made is in terms of PBMR's going concern status, a full provision for all 830 comes to the 55 million, and I need to make sure that we have provision for every person in the organization. What you have to do is PBMR needs to do two things when it works out its budgeting. Is it needs to make provision for retrenchment, so then you would realize the cost and actually pay it out. And what I need to do is make provision for closure costs. Now, closure costs means that if you have committed or entered into a contract, either with an entity or a person, you need to make sure that you keep in your bank account the same amount that it would cost you to be able to close out on contract. So if you look at the budget for next year, I also need to make sure that I keep sufficient funding in the bank account for all costs and all contracts that need to be terminated. So that's the full provision we talk about, and a portion of that would be realized during this process.
you know, do you want that this 65 million to go on record, or you want it to, as a tentative figure? I'm trying to help you, because for me it's incomprehensible that you could retrench more than 600 people worth 50, you said that 50 or much?
Right.
I think I would rather give you an opportunity to say that figure. It sounds
disproportionate.
Can I help you out of that corner?
Chair, what we will do, with your help, is we will include that in the written responses that we do as part of answering these questions as well. All right.
For now, we remove that figure you have given us, because for me, it's suspect. Dr. Van Dalen?
Yes, Mr. Van Dalen. It's not doctor. I can't brag with a grade that I don't have. But, Madam Chair, if you just take that, they are going to... There are 11 directors, they are going to end up with 3, so that is 8 of them, and they're each at 2.5 million already, so it's already nearly 12 million that they have to spend there to retrench those people as well. So it's a lot of money. It sounds very little, this 50 million that she's talking about.
That's what I'm saying, that's my point.
Yeah.
If you consider that of the staff, if you terminate a person in the middle of a contract, you have to pay that person for the remainder of the contract as well. I don't understand. But we would rather give you a space to communicate a correct figure to Parliament for your own sake. Because we will come back and haunt you with this figure. Not unless you want to go and do an injustice to people in the PBMR. I'm saying from the chair, I'm removing this figure you have given us. You will tell us whether you have the right figure. Because there are two possibilities. Either you have under-budgeted or under-calculated, or you are going to do wrong things to people. So let's not talk about that figure.
Chair, thank you. We will take the motion that the Chair is raising, that we'll be able to come back, show how we calculate it, and then show what it calculates to. So it will come as part of our written responses. Chair, the other set of questions that I just want to look at is the ones that related to the questions on IP, who does it belong to.
Can I ask you a favor? Answer my questions last. You see, I have authority and power as chairperson. I don't want my questions to receive priority above the questions of the members. You can answer my questions last. Just make sure that you have exhausted the questions of all other members, then you'll come back to my questions.
Thank you, Chair. In terms of the other questions that were raised, I could just address the question on the director, the one director that was raised. She is no longer a director in the company. This was a representative of Eskom. So the Eskom has given a new director that now sits in that role.
Chair, thank you. We received notification that Ms. Johnson is also one of the general managers in Eskom, and due to her own time constraints, couldn't make all of the meetings that were scheduled. So she's been replaced by Eskom, and we have Mr. Leo Dlamini that is now on the board of PBMR.
Thank you, Chair. There was also the question of... the use of the technology in terms of possible desalination. Chair, yes, we confirm that that's one of the attractions of the technology, as we understand that water is going to be the basis for the economy in the future. This is one of the reasons we believe countries like the U.S. would be interested in high-temperature reactors, because it provides you that capability to also use it for desalination. And we welcome the congratulations, Chair, of the U.S. Announcement, and we just explained that it's currently an announcement, and there will be an engagement between PBMR and the consortium with the U.S. DOE to finally get to a contract, and then the work will happen. So that it sounds like it's an announcement that's been made, and we're now engaging with them.
You know, we have an
Chair, thank you. I will take that note. If you could take some of the questions while I note the passion of the committee.
Chair, as far as the long term is concerned, there are a number of options that PBMR has had a look at as management and are in discussions with DPE on. The question as to are we working with government or are we only working with our stakeholders and, you know, other investors primarily outside of the country. What we've done is we've looked at a number of options and they've come from deliberations and discussions with the various investors, which includes government. DPE have also appointed their own independent consultants to review these options intently and engage with management to have a look, for example, at what are the current timescales look like, what does the level of effort look like in terms of our competence to be able to respond to a contract with the USDOE. How does that impact on the ability for PBMR to finalize the licensing and the design of the reactor, the fuel plant, as well as the fuel? So these options are still under discussion, and I'm sure that Chris could also share with us where we are. It is still anticipated that the discussion on the long-term purpose and intent of PBMR will be discussed in Cabinet, so that this is debated and understood. But these options, you know, range from reincorporation back into Eskom, reincorporation into Nexa. We've also looked at how do we make sure that if we do go through this rationalization process, where can we put this capability? We've opened up an office at PBMR which looks at various options during this process to make sure that if we have invested in competence, that this competence can stay in South Africa. That is important. Our first choice is naturally that it goes back into SOEs like Eskom and Nexa, where there's a natural synergy and relationship if you look at the kind of competence that PBMR has. And second to that is private sector in South Africa before we actually lose this into the international market. But it is a natural known, you know, symptom that good skills go fast and they generally go first. And what we have at PBMR, yes, the morale is low, but we are talking about people that are very passionate about the technology and still wanting to see this commercialized in South Africa for the benefit of all South Africans. Do you want to say
something? Yeah, thanks, Chair. I think maybe I also need to talk about, you know, the perspective that we're coming from at the moment. And it is difficult currently. I mean, you know, everyone's been going a while. They've built up, they've got all these staff. I think the bottom line, as Minister Hogan essentially indicated the other day, was there is no more money from the fiscus. And there is a realization that to have brought this, or to bring this project, and we're calling it a project, to fruition, commercial fruition, you would need to put quite a lot more money in. There have been numbers of 30 billion, et cetera, thrown around. Last year they did change the business model, which said that you would get a customer to fund the demonstration plant, because we obviously knew that Eskom, in its current position, wouldn't be able to be a customer in the short to medium term. So with all of that, knowing that there's no more funding, you know, the technology does have merit. It's actually proven, and that part of the NGNP announcement is it's kind of a I don't know what you call it, ratification or whatever, of the technology. It's not a huge amount of money that they would be bringing in, but it does say to you the technology has worth. So with that in mind, it's looking at, we spent this money for the country, the country's money. What is the value? And that's what gets asked a lot, is for this 8 billion, what is the intrinsic value? Now, that's some of the stuff we're working on. We've got some consultants that have done some work. We're working on it. You know, one of the questions is, if we do go for a PWR program that's going to be R1 trillion or whatever in the future, and the IOP process that will hopefully start its stakeholder engagement pretty soon will tell us when and how much. Let's say, with the skills that have been built up in PWR, you could actually save 1 year in terms of your time frame for that project. Just the interest on that is probably worth more than 8 billion. over the whole program, you know. So those are some of the things we're looking at. Now, the question is, what do we do? And as Lynette said, the minister has set up an IMC, an interministerial committee, to look at the number of options. We're doing the work currently. You know, the one option would have been just to shut it down. But then it's a very haphazard thing, and you lose everything. The other one is to investigate where is the value, what are we doing as a country going forward with nuclear, and that's the discussion even in the workshop that you talk about. And where is the value? I mean, part of NGNP is if PBMR does continue, if they are able to secure investors in this time that they have now, if they rationalize, you know, they could still build something that could actually make us money in the future, but also allow us to then deliver on a nuclear fleet, a conventional or PWR nuclear fleet, much more efficiently. And some of the things that's been looking at, we anticipate that hopefully by August we will have gone to cabinet, and we can't preempt what will come out of that, but to have a final way forward, you know, on this company and where do we go. But as I also said, it's a, you know, it really, and it's from a technical perspective, it's like it was a big project that had so much merit that became a company too soon. So maybe it should have been more R&D for longer and incubated before it actually became a company that wanted to commercialize. And yes, if we had 50 billion, you could probably spend it and it would get you some returns, etc., but we don't have that currently as a country.
I think that post-analysis, I don't even want to say post-analysis because we have not shut the PBMR. But that analysis that you are beginning to grapple with is very important. And I don't know by when will it be forthcoming, because we need to learn lessons from it as a country, even for future generations. So we are interested in that analysis, not only, yes, in terms of the value, but also in terms of the policy decisions, everything related to that, so that we don't only review the PBMR from the money spent perspective, but we also review it from issues, from the angle of decision-making, policy decision-making, et cetera, for the future. So that South Africa must never find itself having spent so much money in one project after 10, 11 years, still not knowing, is it deriving value? Should it close it down or should it close it down, et cetera, et cetera. You see, when I was a school teacher, I taught math, science, and biology. Students would envisage to be nuclear scientists. And I'm talking about under apartheid. We would not share them. Sometimes we would have to send them outside the country to fulfill that ambition. But they knew that there was an option of becoming a nuclear scientist. I don't know if with the inception of PBMR, we have maximized that possibility amongst ordinary people. I'm talking about African learners who would pursue nuclear technology, nuclear science as an option. But when you present us with that report, whether you put it to cabinet and when it comes into the public domain, we really would want to truly check whether, apart from monetary financial value, what value have you been to South African society? What value can you be to South African society moving forward? I don't know if you have exhausted all questions. There is an interesting question from Mr. Van Dalen, which was not answered. Why did investors pull out in 2007?
Yes, Chair, that's our next response. Investors never pulled out. There was only one investor, Exelon, that pulled out of the project, and that was for reasons of an internal merger within Exelon, and a difference that at that point in time they had two different CEOs there. So Exelon pulled out for their own reasons. No other investor has pulled out of PBMR. If we look at why other investors haven't put further money into PBMR and why only government, is the other investors are waiting for a shareholders agreement to be signed. They're looking for a basis of putting money into PBMR, because in that shareholders agreement you would have a look at the rights and obligations of the various investors, including the role of government. So for that reason, there hasn't been further funding. But we are confident that given the time that we have at the moment, we will work with DPE in the finalization of the shareholders agreement.
I'll give you a chance, Mr. van der Linde. We will have to move towards closure of this meeting because this committee must still sit for a few minutes. But I will ask the PBMR people that between today and tomorrow, my office and yours should reconcile the questions that you did not answer so that we have a common understanding of which questions were not answered and which questions are the responses to still outstanding. But having said this, I'll take Mr. van der Linde and give you one more minute to go to one or two questions that you think you are able to do now. Mr. van der Linde?
Yes, Madam Chair. On a question from Dr. Kornhoff from earlier, he asked if all the shareholder agreements were in place, and the answer was affirmative, and now we hear that they are waiting for it to be done. So it doesn't sound like it is right. And then I hope that I get answers to the other questions as well.
You proceed.
Thank you, Chair. May I just apologize if there was the understanding that we had answered affirmatively to that question. We were yet to answer it in our understanding. Maybe in some of our discussion it sounded that we've answered it that way. The shareholders' agreement...
It was a straightforward question, and they said, yes, it's signed, it's in place.
How did you get it?
Ask a question and just respond to the question.
Chair, the question to the specific one, we don't have yet the shareholders agreement, like the CFO explained. There's been a discussion between the current investors, but I wanted to say proposed investors. But it's being discussed, and we hope it can be finalized sooner because it's opening the doors for other investors who are waiting for, because it becomes a framework on how to invest into PBMR.
I have a problem, but it's not your problem. It's a problem of DPE and us. Last week we had a meeting where we asked, you must distinguish for me the shareholder contract and the shareholder agreement. Last week we asked DPE and the minister, are all shareholder compacts in place? The question was yes. Now, how does that differ from this? Now, that would mean the shareholder compact for PBMR is also in place. But now the shareholder agreement, I don't understand. Just clarify that for us.
Okay, Chair. The shareholder compact is essentially our performance targets that we place. So it's different from the shareholder agreement. The shareholders agreement is that document that we then govern a shareholding in the company and rights and obligations and all that kind of stuff. And there's been a lot of discussion and negotiation around that. And I think the DG would probably, even if she were here today, would be best placed to answer, because she was intimately involved in that. But there were some reasons why DPE was not prepared to sign it, because of risk to government. And we felt there needed to be more work around that.
That's a very interesting one. I don't want to belabor this point. Let's give you a chance to complete the other questions. How many questions are you still willing to answer? Then if we have time, we'll talk about the risk of the risk to government, if we have time.
Could I just maybe then answer just one of the group of questions that related to the CEO and the other executives? Then we can agree.
Members, which questions of yours are still outstanding?
If it was a wasteful expenditure, and then she only touched on the 38 EI users group, but we asked what incentive do they have if they get everything for free? How are they going to convince them to spend money on something that they're getting free now?
Yes.
That was the main thrust of my one question.
Nana?
Chairperson, you'll pardon me. I keep on going in and out. I've got ulcer. Now I may have missed part of the responses. I did ask a question about, is there a plan in place to handle the skill that may be lost to PBMR and possibly the country?
Plan. Before this, okay.
Sorry, I do have to address the EIUD and the minister did on Friday essentially explain that all of those customers are under standard contracts except two, which are on special deals. And those are the ones, the smelters essentially, that are under renegotiation. But I have to say there's a thing of people getting stuff for free, that isn't with any basis given the incentive. Well, no. I suggest the similar to the workshop on PBMR, we should actually have because I've actually taken the minister, etc., through all of those tariffs. They can't tell you exactly which tariff they're on, but I can tell you which of four they will be on, because we have that info, so that we are able to confirm that they are on standard tariffs, which are in Eskom tariffs, because I can email you tariffs if you'd like.
No, I wanted to say this question should not go to PBMR, actually. It should go to DPE and the minister. Now, you say you will email the info. Yes. Email it, then I'll distribute it to members. And then it's an issue we're interested in. We'll continue engaging on. Mr. Fandali.
Yes, Madam Chair, I think it's important. If PBMR comes here and I put on the board that those companies are going to get the service from them, then obviously we need to know where they premise that on, where do they get that feeling that these people are going to spend money on PBMR if they are getting cut very low prices for the energy. Why? What would incentivize them to go there? This is the plan they are laying in front of us. I mean, if I'm missing the pot here, then, I think you are quite wrong in telling me that doesn't sit here. These people must have an idea that they are going to support them, and if they have that idea, then I want to know where they get it.
Cliff?
Yeah, I don't know who will be in the workshop, Chair, but I think it's stuff that can be gone. Look, some of the large customers that are polluters in the industry, in our country, would possibly want to go for a nuclear-type technology, like PBMR, to be able to reduce their own carbon footprint. Some have other reasons, and maybe they want to get into power. Each would have different, but, we can go through that, but, it's not really, I don't think we have the time to
yeah.
do that job.
But PBMR must not entice us by throwing these things into their presentations, because we will follow them through.
Madam Chair, this is the point. If they tell me there's something that is just there pie in the sky and it might happen, then the rest of the plan, is that also pie in the sky, you know? I need to feel that they can do something with it. Otherwise, this, we have wasted our time with this thing.
Please hear that.
Chair, thank you. On this point, yes, we agree with the TPEs, because that is the discussion. However, the reason we've put them on the screen is that we've actually looked at the model. The model was previously PMR was housing a design house. PMR was to contemplate construction. PMR, so now we've said, what is the best model? And when that was discussed in PMR, we started approaching these companies and telling them this is the thinking that we're having. And the several ones that we put there, like Sasol, they actually say they want to come on board. They realize the business model that we're looking at. They can participate in the consortium, the special purpose vehicle consortium. So it's something that we've actually engaged them on. So this is the perspective in which we've put it on our screen.
And because it has not been completed or been brought to fruition, we'd rather not discuss it here, because we're discussing a pie in the sky, as we say. The issue of retention plan of skills, we would like you to supply us with that. And when we say retention plan of skills, we don't mean pale and male and everybody else. We also want to know that were those people who spend a little bit of time there, who might be at the low ranks of the organization, we expect you to retain some of them as well. And what is your plan for them? So if you are just going to, or to create a future for them, what future are you proposing, you know, for them? So that retention plan, we would like you to send to us. If it's not ready soon, very soon. If it's not ready within the 15 working days, you must tell us by when will you submit. Mr. Nana?
Yeah, I agree with you, Chairman, but can I just add that in the retention plan you are referring to, I'm quite interested in the broader retention, not only within PBMR. I mean, you have other institutions that may need people that are as skillful as those that will be retrenched by PBMR. Are you in talks with those institutions? You know,
we need in South Africa, yeah, particularly within the state. If we can't put all of them in the state, then still in South Africa as a first thing elsewhere. Okay. So you were to answer, Mrs.
Yes, Chair. Thank you, Chair. Yes, that was the last question. You were. Please give me an opportunity to answer. Chair, in terms of that, the time frames, obviously, the acting time frame is very transitional. However, when the understanding from the board that when at least a decision has been made on where PBMR is going, then the process will be initiated to actually appoint the CEO that will take the...
Actually, not fair to let you answer that question. That's I thought you would answer it. It's really not fair.
Thank you, Chair. I missed that. But I would be, as Alex has already indicated, it is indeed acting. We are going through this process. It is a matter of months, also in consultation with the DPE. But it is certainly a matter of months, a quarter 3 to 6 months, I would expect to finalize.
Your personal expectation, or is that the board's expectation?
No, that's the board's expectation. Chair, everything at the moment is being, you know, we are in the process of consultation and also in discussion with the DPE. So yes, indeed, it's not clear to an end date has not been determined, but the end date would depend on the outcome of the consultations. But as the acting CEO has then indicated, it's a matter of months. It's temporary, after which a process will be put in place to appoint a permanent CEO.
You know, I'm bringing this meeting to a close now. You are unfortunate because you report this to us at a point where we have been told before by this this committee that acting positions are for a few months temporary, and they became months became years. So you are unfortunate in that because of that experience, we will watch over this process like with a hawk's eye, because last week we had an engagement about these vacancies. A CEO position is a very strategic. Instead of these acting positions diminishing, they are increasing. And sometimes we remove one CEO from one SOE to the other. It's like creating a debt to go and pay another debt. So we're asking this question. We hope that these processes will not take too long. We'll also imprint this upon the shareholder and as broadly defined to say that these things of reviewals, of SOEs, repositioning, realigning their mandates and everything, it's a process that we cannot engage in forever. Neither can the situation be allowed to perpetuate where you have acting all over the show for months and months and months on end. On this note, I don't know if there is any other remark from members. If not, I'll take you and then we'll close the meeting.
Thank you, Chair. Just to answer Mr. van Dalen's question on has there been wasteful expenditure because you're now in a process where you were spending and you are saving, the answer is no. There has not been any wasteful expenditure in PBMR. We thank the PBMR, Dr. Sula.
Thank you. I just wish to say thank you to the committee for allowing us, though we were late in terms of the submission, to allow us to come and brief the committee on the annual report. Chair, without any doubt, South Africa was brave to look at this technology. There has been value. I think that workshop, Chair, that the committee decided on is very important to say where is the value, how much of it is there, what can still be done to it. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you also. You are going to be the first to table your annual report because you've got a debt with us. Yeah, in August. Thank you very much. You may excuse us. We have an item to deal with after you've left. The researcher presented to you in my absence, I think. Lisang, have you organized further snacks for the committee? 2 minutes stretching? 2 minutes? Okay. Whilst we're checking on the teas and things outside. The researcher gives us another a quick synopsis again because we had sent them back to do, and then out of that we map the way forward of how we want to deal with this thing, remembering that we had decided as a committee that it's an important thing to look into. If you agree, can I give the researcher some time? Then we engage.
Chairperson, can we just make sure that all the members had a copy of the research work? Is it for?
Sorry, is that the one that was distributed last week? Because I was told that it was going to be rehashed.
The last one was the legal perspective.
I haven't received it. That's the one I received. I've received nothing.
Where's the cop? Huh? You haven't received today? Yeah. You see, his vision is he's like me. We agree that we'll increase the font next time for Mr. Mukwena because he's got challenges. Please proceed.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll try to be brief, hoping that the members will familiarize themselves with the document. Because it seems to me that this issue is straightforward. Transnet had two pension funds. One was for white employees and the other one was for black employees. But then in 1999, they decided to merge the two pension funds. Following that, apparently there was a deficit on the pension fund of something like 17.1 billion. It also appears to me that even before the merger was made, there were concerns with regard to the deficit. Maybe because I assume that the money that the pensioners were receiving was even then very low, because as they merged, Transnet came up with a proposal that they were going to address the deficit. They came up with three different ways. One was Transnet will pay 10.3 billion to the fund, and another one was the contribution from the side of Transnet will be 10%, 12.5%, and up to 15.5% in the financial year to 1993-1994 financial year. And the rest of the deficit was going to be addressed over a period of 10 years. But none of these commitments actually did manage to reduce the deficit, which means then it continued. And then in 2000, again, Transnet decided to split the pension fund into three categories. One was the Transnet Retirement Fund, which was for members. Excuse me. This was for members who didn't want to become
members of a defined pension fund. And then the second one was the Transnet Pension Fund. This was for workers who retired after April 2000. And then the third one, which I think is the one which is a problem right now, is the Transnet Second Defined Benefit Fund. This one was for all members who retired prior to the 1st of November 2000. It explains the measures from 1990 up until 2000. But this time around, then there was a statutory increase of 2% that the pensioners were going to get each year an increase of 2%. And this was not like related to the inflation. Apparently, it had nothing to do with the inflation or the condition of the pensioners. But the implication I got was that Transnet was saving costs to service the deficit, because it seems to me that this was their main problem. Following that, then, but already before 2000, the pensioners have been campaigning, trying to address the matter that the 2% that they were receiving was not adequate in terms of their livelihood. They made a number of approaches. They approached almost every minister of the Department of Public Enterprise right prior to 1994 and thereafter. They also engaged all the CEOs of Transnet, trying to say the same thing, that the 2% increase was not in line with how their living standards, when you take into consideration the inflation rate. But all of these are role players. What they said were like, yes, we're going to look at the matter, we will address the matter, but in some instances there was a case where the Transnet official said, no, this 2% increase is what we've decided, is what the rules governing the pension fund are saying, and we don't intend to increase. This is how things are going to be for the foreseeable future. So, but then the pensioners didn't stop there. They are engaged even the minister. The minister will say, yes, I've spoken with Transnet. As soon as they come back to me with the feedback, and then I will try to address the matter. But other than that, there has been nothing that has been done with regard to the 2% increase. And the pensioners remain as they were, and without any of this being addressed. But another aspect of this is the investment that the pension fund that it had. There was the MTN shares that were owned by the pension fund. But when Transnet decided to sell these shares, I'm not going to go to the details because the document does explain this. When these were sold, Transnet realized cash benefit of 5 billion. That was 5 billion. And one would have expected that this money would have gone to the pension fund, because those shares belong to the pension fund, but instead it went to Transnet. And one of the correspondents between Transnet and one of the representative of the pensioners was that, where did the money go? And then Chris Wells, who was then the chief financial officer, said, we are Transnet guarantors. So this money comes to us, and we are trying to deal with the deficit. At the same time, we are trying to look at other related matters. So which means, even though that they realized a cash benefit of 5 billion, this had no implications on the money that the pensioners got that year. But in some cases, Transnet says they give a bonus to the pensioners. I don't know whether the bonus, it's not like a bonus that is statutory. Whenever they feel maybe that we need to give the pensioners a bonus, then they will give them that bonus. And also, the pension fund also had shares on the waterfront. When the waterfront was sold, Transnet received transaction of 7.5 billion. Even that one, it had no implication on the pensioners.
the pensioners continue to get the 2% increase they get every year, and Transnet, I'll assume that they got maybe, they gave maybe them a bonus, I do not know, but the money that the pensioners often got is very low. The lowest person who receives a pension is 214 rand a month.
The highest?
The highest, I think.
2,800.
So all of these investments, even though Transnet admits that they are owned by the pension fund, but when they make a profit or they have converted into cash, the pensioners get nothing. So that has been the situation. Just to quote one of the statement that was made in August 2005 by Transnet. Transnet is saying, quote, the matter is receiving the necessary and urgent attention of the management of Transnet, including the Chief Executive Officer Maria Ramos and the Chief Financial Officer Chris Wells. Transnet is committed to making meaningful progress on matters relating to the TSDPF within this calendar year, which was 2005. But to date, nothing has been done. My recommendation when I look
your
at...
My proposed recommendation,
is that I think the committee will need to meet with Transnet just to get at the bottom of this, because it seems to me that Transnet does admit that the pension fund is their problem, and also that they have this deficit. Either they do not know how to deal with the deficit, I do not know. But it seems that that deficit is responsible for the statutory 2% increase. Either they are still servicing it, but it seems to me that this is their problem, but they admit that the 2% increase is unfair to the pensioners. And I was also looking at the financial implications, that if the committee was to propose an amendment of an increase, it will still need to engage with Transnet, because Transnet is also contributing to that fund. Right now, they are contributing, according to the minister, this was the answer she gave to Parliament, that they are contributing 81%. So if the committee can propose an increase without engaging with Transnet, Transnet will say, we do not have that money. So I think it's best first to engage with Transnet and the committee to make proposals that we, in terms of either the increase will be inflation-related or over a period of years, but Transnet has to have the obligation to honor that increase. That was my recommendation. Thank you, John.
Before we end, I would like to check with the legal advisor if there is anything she wants to say at this point.
No, I think it's very premature for me to make any proposal at this point. Last week what I circulated was just the process that we have to engage in.
Members, before we engage, I'm invited to a meeting at 2 o'clock, which affects you, some of you as well. Remember we wanted to go and check the electricity at the stadium. Loftus Fairfield, Bloemfontein, and was it Orlando Stadium? There are 8 committees that are dealing with 2010. The chair of chairs have put them together into one, I don't want to say super, but huge committee of 40. So all of us must bring 5 into that committee, and then they are going to divide the committee into 2 components. One going inland and one going coastal. This meeting this afternoon is to make sure that none of the committee's issues go through the cracks. I mean, like ours is to make sure that Mr. Compeller, in the first meeting we held 2 weeks ago, made a passionate plea to us as public enterprises. He agreed with that mission. He supported it fully. He says when they went to the stadium with their delegation and FIFA, they did not check what will happen. They saw generators are there,
but they did not, the generators were not tested in their presence, and they do not also know in the event of power failure how long it will take each generator in the stadium to fall into mode immediately, because if it takes a minute, it will be disastrous. So he made a plea that as this committee, he supports us, and he thinks when we go there, we must make sure we test those generators and whether they will be able to, as soon as power failure occurs, they will immediately go into use. You know the technical word. So that meeting is at 2 o'clock. We are to send 5 people on the oversight. It's going to be on the 20th?
The
9th, just after Easter. The 6th to the 9th of April. I will be on the delegation, and I had supposed, of course, DA will send one, and COPE must send one. So, you will always benefit, even on international drugs. And I'm looking for a way of circumventing this. So, COPE, you know, I'm raising this so that you know the dates and you go and clear your diaries, and DA, you'll determine who between the two of you is coming with. From the ANC, it will be myself. Ms. Bowman is not available. So we need one person of the ANC. I had proposed, I don't want to propose. Have you spoken to?
No, we
just
need to change the name.
Yeah. So, gender, you know gender. I said to decide, put the chairperson aside in the ANC delegation and let's address gender, and you are there. So you came. Now you're no longer here, so the gender thing will fall away. I'll have to represent. So we need two names for the ANC. Mr. Hololo is one of the names. Okay. And then Mr. Mukwena, I'll have to make... Don't point at each other, because I'm going to decide. Is it? Mr. Mukwena, you... I need to take those names to the meeting at 2. Okay. Unfortunately, sorry. Okay, thanks. DA, your name?
Chairperson, we will forward the name of the specific person. If I can just ask the secretary to email me a short invitation of what, where, when, the venue, the times, and we will have someone either from the NA or the NCOP to join this oversight visit.
The meeting is it 3 o'clock?
Yeah, at 3.
The same office, the meeting is here. All the members who have been identified, that's why you must know. All the members should meet here at 3 o'clock, the ones who are going.
3 o'clock.
And, the same venue. And it's a small venue anyway.
Today.
You see, it's no longer our oversight. So it's Parliament's oversight. So we're not communicating the notices. This one is luckily by coincidence, the secretary for that Parliament's oversight. So I don't have much to do with it. If you don't receive communication in time, etc., it's Parliament's oversight now, like the oversight one. It's a big committee. Yes, thanks. Now let's go back to the issue of discussion. So, DA, we need to know today who of the two of you would be going.
Chairperson, there will be a person at 3 o'clock.
Okay,
yeah.
If
it's not one of us, then
but
it will
it
be one
be
of
from the NCOP.
No, then it will be someone from energy, because energy and public enterprise is almost...
No. Look, energy is one of the 8 committees. They will be sending their own 5. So we have to send 5 from the DPE. If DA is not willing to go, you can ask Craylen to go, because it's opposition. So I will mandate you to talk to another opposition member in the committee who will come with us.
Chairperson, I think then you must make a ruling, because the invitation for this come a little bit late, and neither me or Mr. Van Dalen will be available at this specific stage. So I will then ask you, please, to ask in someone of the other official, not the official, the opposition parties to attend. Thank you.
If you give me the permission, I didn't want to do that without your permission. Okay, thanks. Please, with there are the issues and the recommendations. Dr. Van Dijk?
Chairperson, yes. First of all, I want to thank, from our side, I want to thank Mr. Boskati for this research that he did on this TSDBF, this Transnet Second Defined Pension Benefit Fund. Chairperson, and then I would like to make a proposal to the committee, seeing the time problem that we have every time, and taking into account that this is an urgent process as 2,500 members passed away per annum, as mentioned also by Mr. Boskati in the document. I would like, Chairperson, to propose that this committee appoints a small work committee, one member from maybe every political party, a work committee that we gathered every week 10 minutes prior or after this committee on this issue with Mr. Boskati and with Advocate Aptikari. And that in the meanwhile that the committee familiarize themselves with this document distributed by Mr. Boskati today, and that we ask Advocate Aptikari after this 2 weeks that we're going into constituency period, that on the 12th of April, not the 12th or 13th, with our first meeting then, that Advocate Aptikari also then made a presentation from the legal side, now that she has the time to familiarize her with Mr. Boskati's document, and that we have a presentation then by Advocate Aptikari on the 13th of April, and that a week later, on the 20th of April, that this small work committee then come with a program to the committee concerning the proposal by Mr. Boskati that trustees, Transnet, and the actuaries and members of the funds comes to address this committee, then before the end of May, before this Parliament goes into recess for the World Cup for June and July. So, Chairperson, what I would like to do is to bind us into a time frame because of the seriousness of this issue. And when all these people recommended by Mr. Boskati come to address this committee, that we then have a formal report after July, in August, when we come back after that 2 months recess, and that we then try to finalize this thing before the end of October. That everything has been done before the end of October, because, you know, in November it is always almost time for the end of the year to wrap up with this whole process. This is a proposal from my side.
Before I respond to your proposal, let me listen to Gloria.
Thank you, Chairperson. I must say that because this has gone on for so long, it sort of makes one actually quite ashamed that, you know, we drag something like this on of such importance. But and so I'm very supportive of the suggestion that we actually set in motion those, you know, the committee and that will get working on it. But my question, and just whilst we do have the legal advisor here, it is my understanding that possibly by way of an amendment to the Act, the Pensioners Act, that we will be able to rectify this. Now, I just want to be clear that before we set in motion this whole thing, that legally, actually, we are able to proceed with it. And, I mean, I think it's terribly important that we do find the way. But, are we wasting our time or are we not? I think that's really what I'm asking.
Good enough.
Chair, I have no problem with the proposal by Dr. Van Dijk about a working group. Let's get back to the recommendation of Eric Bokashi. I think he's included now at least three delegations. The Board of Trustees, Transnet, the delegation representing the pensioners, as well as the legal representatives of Parliament. I think... and actuaries. So it's five, at least five groupings. And then I think we should set a time for a meeting. That becomes a hearing then, in a certain sense, because the working group will prepare documentation with the legal input, with financial inputs and implications, and that meeting it seems to me, according to Eric's proposal, will consider two matters. What are the legal implications for the proposal, and what are the financial implications for the proposal? And then we can make a decision.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As I indicated earlier, I've set out a proposal a process document, assuming that we go the legislative amendment route. I also have very, very rough framework documents which speak to all of those rules at the National Assembly that we have to adhere to. But that is assuming that we go the legislation, the committee bill route. Now, what is lacking for me, and in terms of the recommendation, the proposed recommendation here, is whether the Minister of Finance, what the role of the Minister of Finance has, because if it is indeed that a certain percentage is funded, then he, the Minister of Finance or some representative would also have to address the committee so that one can understand clearly, you know, what input they make, firstly. And secondly, that might also indicate to us whether it's in fact a money bill or not, if there are any direct charges to the National Revenue Fund. So those are things that will inform the advice that I would need to give. But if you like, I can distribute these very, very rough drafts, as I say. They are not meant for members to be looking at the actual wording, but just the gist of what's going to be contained in the various documents that this committee would have to generate if it's a bill emanating from the committee, right up to the final bill stage for publication. But as I say, the wording is very rough.
I want to agree with a number of things from the chair. One, that we form a specialized small committee of Mr. Fandate. Dr. Koranoff, will you be able to serve on this committee? Yeah. Yourself, the two of you, with Mr. Boskati as the legal advisor. That's the first thing. The second thing, I agree to a meeting fairly soon, sometime before we write, an actual meeting which will take decisions as to do we go the legislative route. But I must say from the check, with the history that was put before us by Mr. Boskati's research, these people have been given a raw deal for a long time. And the legislative route will take a long, long time to address their plight. I'm therefore saying, if it must be the route, we must look into issues in addition to the legislative route. But my analysis is this is a close benefit. So I don't know what are the legal implications of dealing with a close benefit in terms of is it will it require a money bill or not. I'm speaking from...
due respect, one little question, clarification. These people of Transnet, these people who are prisoners of Transnet, are they treated separately from the general government pension fund? Aren't they part of that? We should then make things a bit easier.
Yes.
I'm just asking the stationary question, because the state employees, still from us, state employees, and the government has got the government
pension
fund.
Yeah.
Now, shouldn't there have been the COVID-19 fund as the benefits? Are just universally the same, because we must not treat them in a very separate, and then they get the raw deal. Whereas if we look at them in the context of the government pension fund, then all these concerns just follow. It's just a question of just load them into the proper.
Unfortunately, it's a very good question. Unfortunately, they are not part of the general government pension fund. This parliament, for one reason or another, together with Transnet and the Transnet, put them into a separate entity and ringed them off, ring-fenced them and their pension benefits. So they are not part of that. So that's why also this can address the way forward very easily, that yes, if it was part of the pension fund, the general government pension fund,
then it's a money bill, then Treasury will have to play a role, and but it is not. And in fact, there are things that Transnet had undertaken to do, which it did not do, in terms of the deficit, in terms of, and all those things. So I don't see it actually leading, I didn't want to say this from the chair, I don't see it leading into a legislative process, but don't rule that out. But I don't see it definitely being a money bill issue, because of the history in terms of how they were ring-fenced. Dr. Fundy?
Chairperson, yes. Chairperson, yes. I think this is the Transnet Pension Fund is governed actually by the Board of Trustees by a recommendation of Transnet, and if there's a financial implication, they must have the approval of the Minister of Finance. So what if we do amend the one section of this Transnet Pension Fund Act, says the rules will determine the percentage increase, and the one rule, one sentence says it is 2%. So it is not overall of the whole legislation and all the rules. It is small amendments. But I agree with Mr. Boskati that once the people come to address us, we can have the Minister of Finance. Also, we can, or Treasury, to come, because Transnet is the guarantor of the fund and government is the guarantor of Transnet. So we can have Treasury also to come and address the committee. But I would like to propose, agreed with Advocate Aptekari, that she also makes this document of hers available today. We've got the document from Mr. Boskati, then we've got the documents from Advocate Aptekari, and that the committee members can familiarize them ourselves in the next 14 days. And then after this 2 weeks, when we come back from constituency, that Advocate Aptekari give us a formal presentation. Like she said, you know, who will be involved, who will not be involved, and the exact wording of which section and which rule will have to be amended, and what will be the old wording, and how will the new wording be look like. And then the committee, the small committee, me and Dr. Kornhoff, and the researcher and the legal advisor, can then give a program to the committee when we come back to say that we propose on that and that day the different people that Mr. Boskati recommended must come and address us, and that we can take the thing then on a speedy basis forward. Thank
you. Just to say that both the presentation of the legal person and the subcommittee will have to be piggyback into the program for the next quarter, which we have already designed. We have only 4 weeks, so we will have to look into the day or 2 days which are not so loaded, so that the first day, one meeting she presented, and the other day we join it with, avoiding the situation of Friday also, where we could, otherwise we will have to ask for special permission to meet on a particular day to give proper attention to this issue. Sometimes
in the evening, sorry, Sir Bajan, can all ask for permission to schedule some of the meetings in the evenings?
In the evening?
Yeah.
Yes. In the evening, yes, because Friday is...
Objection, Chairperson. It looks like this evening thing is becoming a norm in this parliament. Certainly we were called for the State of the Nation address at night. Now what does one to do at night?
Don't you like the night? The night is a very nice thing, man.
Silent night.
Perhaps we could remind the member that this is an active parliament. We've got to use all our time.
Dr. Kurunov was on the list.
Listen, I think that let's just get to the recommendation. Mr. Boskati's recommendation is now amended to include at least three other groups for the hearing. I think we must include National Treasury. So it's a board of trustees, it's Transnet, it's a delegation of the pensioners, it's the legal advisors, it's the National Treasury, and it's the actuaries, if I understand it correctly. So it's at least six groups. That means it's at the least a whole morning, if not a whole day, deliberation. Secondly, the agenda is the legal and financial implications. Mr. Boskati mentioned a thing that I picked up that I will study it. But you say there were bonuses paid or promised Now, that's the first thing that worries me a little bit. So let's discuss it at that committee. We don't have to discuss it here. It seems to me we must go as early as possible for this combined hearing then, with these six entities coming to us. And if the committee, this committee seems to me doesn't, it's just a post office, who's going to take the current information, put something in, and put it to a recommendation to the hearing that we're going to have. And the committee will probably have to work after the meeting with the stakeholders.
Let's just interrogate, thanks, Dr. Kouros, this issue of actuaries. Actuaries are paid for, and we don't have that kind of money. You must explain what you mean when you say we must bring actuaries on board. Because Treasury do have actuaries. We can say that you guys, the subcommittee, must work with some people in Treasury that would not charge a fee. Because if we want a special category of actuaries, how are we going to pay them? They're paid for per hour.
Metropolitan administered this fund on behalf of Transnet. And I've got documents on the financial implications if the pensions increase on the same as 75% or 100% of the inflation, like the rest of the public service. But their actuaries, Metropolitan, we can ask Metropolitan, because they're working for Transnet, to come here, and we don't pay them because they are part of Transnet. They can come and address us. And they work with this fund, they know the fund, and they can tell us, give us any information that we would like about the financial implications from them.
If we say we're paying the actuaries of the administrator of the pension fund, it's okay. They will be objective. Yeah. Okay. I'll take two more hands, then we close the meeting. Dr. Koronov and our legal advisor.
Can I ask you just a question? Whether you as chair or Dr. Van Wyk has spoken to Transnet about this issue before the parliamentary committee, and whether they've made the input that this is a major state-owned entity reporting to, that we have oversight with, and reporting to DPE. Just a courtesy call to say, this is on the agenda, it's going to come to Parliament, you will have a chance to come and brief us. I think it's just courtesy for you as chair to talk to some level, I don't know where, with the state-owned entity to say, this is on the agenda, it's coming your way.
I didn't want to do that which you are recommending before we decide as a committee exactly what is it that we want to do. Because remember, we have been having 15 minutes discussions. Now we have agreed on the way forward. I think now I can, as chairperson, begin to communicate to Transnet that we are on this path as the committee. You love the meeting, members, even and when you are hungry.
Chair,
I will take...
Just a small comment on
what I think. I'll take Gloria, Mr. Nana, and yourself.
Chairperson, just along those lines, I have picked up that our current Minister of Enterprises has also been assured that, you know, she would do something. I'm just wondering if there is some homework that's already been done there that we can also pick up on.
Normally when we write to the entities, when I write to the entities, I write to the Minister also for information, and then I write to DPE as a practice, so that they do not, and then I'm sure at that point, if there is any information they would like to forward, they will forward. Okay. Mr. Nana?
Chairperson, pardon my ignorance in this regard. Can I check, is there any sister committee that may be dealing with Transnet in case we transport? Okay.
The only deal was Transnet with the issue of the storage of fuel, the pipeline for delivering fuel, but they are directly under us. You are the last one, sir.
Chairperson, yeah, I can just mention that the board of directors of Transnet got copies of that document that's been distributed via the committee secretary that I put together also, that research document that every member of the committee received, Transnet also received it. So they've got the background, they know what it's all about, but as Dr. Koronov said, that you as a committee chairperson at some stage we'll liaise with them once we invite them to come and address us. But they are all familiar with this issue. Thank you, Chair.
You gave that mandate to yourself to send that document to them. On that note, we will close this meeting.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to appeal to the committee. I know the proposal has been that I first address the committee and then these entities, but to a large extent, those that input will inform my presentation. So I think we're doing it the wrong way.
I think that it must be the other way around.
The other way around. I can prepare, but I still need that input and that information to advise.
Okay.